This is HPR episode 2535 entitled, HPR 2017 New Year's Eve Show Part 4. It is hosted by various hosts, and is about 206 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Part 4 of the 6th Annual HPR New Year Show.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Not to leave anyone out, but since I only talk to you guys usually once a year, want to say howdy to Thistleweb and Ken and to Pokey.
Yeah, happy New Year, 50. I didn't realize you were active yet, but how you doing, man?
Yeah, I've been kind of listening for a while since I went and got lunch, but didn't get on till late. I explained earlier I picked up an awful bad cough here the last few days, so jump in at 5 a.m. just did not seem like a good idea when I've been short on sleep the last couple of days.
Yeah, I hear you. How's the new house? Still loving it?
Oh, yeah, very much.
I think this is actually the first year I've made it onto the group New Year's Eve chat. It's always off doing something else.
Well, welcome then.
Yeah, very cool. Glad to have you.
Good it falls on the new year or on the weekend sometimes.
Yeah, and not during my honeymoon.
And yeah, it's worth mentioning, giving a shout out to Pokey for inventing this whole thing.
Oh, I didn't invent podcasting. That was Adam Curry.
As long as no one ends up in the Pokey.
Yeah, that could be uncomfortable for both of us.
Well, you know, this is one of those events that is looked forward to by many people every year, me included. Because I only got enough to say for one evening. The rest of the year, I don't have anything to say.
Get it all out. Shout.
So I'm assembling a component tester here. And in order to do it, I need a component tester to figure out what the polarity is of the components I'm putting on my component tester.
Positive or negative?
Thanks. That is super helpful.
50-50 shot.
If the voltage is low enough, Ken, you just tongue test it. You can taste positive and negative.
These things, guys, are tiny. Literally, I've had boogers bigger than these things. That's probably an image you don't want, but there you go.
Alien boogers are big.
Ken, do they have any writing on?
No, they... one, I think, is a capacitor, so that shouldn't matter. The other is a zener. I'm not sure what the polarity is on it. And no writing, no nothing.
What's the capacity of your capacitor?
The zener, you can look up what the polarity is of a zener. I can't remember. I should. I have a degree in electronics, but well, I forget.
What is it that you're constructing?
It's a component tester. It's based on a Arduino chip. And you can put in, like, resistors, capacitors, and various different things, and it'll tell you what they are. Because I got boxes of stuff here from my father-in-law, and I just want to go through and see what exactly they are.
Well, feel free to post the instructions in one of the chats, and I'll get it over on the show notes.
Well, there you go. There are no instructions. That's kind of the whole point.
Okay,
I just got a badge.
I've got it if you want it.
This feels like a airplane movie or something. Cut the red
now,
line.
Ken, a zener diode, a current flows in one direction only from the anode, the positive side, to the cathode. So the line, the negative side, is marked with a stripe.
And there is absolutely nothing marked on this. It's a surface mount component. Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes it hard.
Zero.
Oof. Hey, Ken, does it still record if I'm muted and deafened or no?
I don't know, but don't worry about it. Going ahead.
Okay.
Not if you're deafened, I don't think.
How would you know if you were deaf?
You wouldn't be able to hear anything.
So you wouldn't know.
As long as you just mute your mic, you'll be fine.
Okay, well, 7 hours of my recording are null.
Well, you can actually tell, because if you look at the file size, if there's nothing going through, Mumble won't record anything. It just puts in a timestamp. So if you see the file size increase, then you know it's recording still.
Yeah, it was all zero until I came back in here.
Oh, dear.
Okay. So that was 7.5 hours of
silence.
That
is good to know.
I'm recording the stream in 3 hour chunks, so.
All right.
We'll put it on the blockchain and patch it all together.
If you need my copies for me, give me a shout, yeah?
Well, I was just doing it to help you guys out, but I'll go ahead and mute myself and start recording again.
Can I just put something in the chat that give you a little info?
Man, this thing is even tinier than I thought. Seriously, it's 1 millimeter wide. My...
That's absurd.
All right, I'll be back, guys.
I guess if I can solder this, then I can say to myself, I know how to solder. See you guys.
Good luck.
Do you have a heat gun or anything, Ken?
No, I've got a tiny soldering iron, and I've seen a guy who's done a video on it, so it's doable. It's just be patient. Something that I'm not very good at, but I reckon a capacitor should. It looks like a capacitor, so I reckon it should be okay either way.
You could build a Andrino powered bipolar bear to do this testing for you.
Yeah, not very helpful, Casper. Thank you. Does anyone know how to check with a multimeter if a capacitor is a capacitor?
This sounds like an NY Bill question. It doesn't look like we have an NY Bill.
Oh, Lord. I forget.
Ohms. Let me see. Microfarads? I guess.
Yeah, farads is capacitor.
Yeah, but I don't have that. I got no, this is DC volts. 220, and then we got AC amps.
Weasels.
Let me see. Amps. HFE. Henry Farad? No. Not helpful. Okay. Right, I'll go do some research. Talk to you later.
Sorry, I couldn't help more. I don't build stuff, I break stuff.
Yes. Yes, join the club.
You can take it apart. That's the easy part.
Tis true. Okay, I'll be back in a while.
Well, as Douglas Adams says, if you take apart a cat to find out how it works, all you have is one non-working cat.
But then you can attach the nitrous to the cart, make it go to light speed, and join us in the galaxy above.
And Casper, you were asking about the U-Random podcast earlier this afternoon, and as all three of the cast members are here in the room, I figured they could probably tell you more about it.
No, we can't. Sorry.
Oh, dis.
That's one of these Fight Club things. No one talks about it.
That's the first rule.
And the second rule.
You have to listen. If you don't listen, you can't talk about it.
The first rule of U-Random is nobody listens to U-Random. So, not even the people who make it.
I know.
Now, that's a scurrious lie. I certainly do listen to it.
Does anybody do show notes for Random?
They do excellent show notes.
So somebody's listening.
No, Lyle does excellent show notes. I just make the shows.
Okay.
Mostly I make show notes so that when I say, hey, we talked about that thing like 3 months ago. Where was the link to it? I can go look it up on the page.
Well, Rediger will be joining in this Galactica Empire here, and we'll have the team, the Alien Brothers team, full stream, full live.
Just an FYI for those using the Etherpad show notes. If you click on the far right of the page where you see the colored icon at the top of the page, and it's the very far right on the toolbar there, you'll get a drop down and you can actually input your name and change your color, and that way that's kind of helpful for
actually it's oh sorry guys sorry Kevin for interrupting
You're fine.
It's a two-way dyak. Would that be bipolar, I think? Gonna have NY Bill screaming at this.
No!
We'll just tell NY Bill he owes you a show on explaining all this.
That's his bloody fault I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's a bi-directional can.
Okay. Bloody hell. You old bunch of cabbages.
So it shouldn't matter. And the capacitor, I don't think this capacitor minds either, by the looks of it. Okay. Carry on talking. Don't mind me.
While we have another lull here, I'd like to give a big shout out to K5 Tux Russ Woodman from Linux in the Ham Shack. We were scrambling just yesterday. Claudio M, turn your mic off.
Turn his headphones down.
So anyway, we were scrambling for the Etherpad layout that we've used for years, and nobody seems to bother to back it up and make a copy every year. So K5 Tux had hosted the Etherpad a couple of years. I think it was 2013 and 14. He happily, begrudgingly did some magic with uploading his Etherpad server back to a DigitalOcean droplet and had to rebuild the database to retrieve the Etherpad for us. And I just want to thank him for doing that. I have since then went through it, cleaned out the previous content, got it back to, you know, updated the dates for this year's show, and before, you know, anybody entered anything made from the Etherpad Lite, you can actually export in three different formats. Did that and zipped them up and emailed them to Honky Magoo and others so that we have those for future.
Okay, could send them to me. And I really, of all the people here, I understand how much work that is. Big thanks to you, all of you guys.
Casper's got to go pick up some things in preparations for Rudiger to arrive. So I will be back in 10 to 5.
Cheerio.
So I got a topic I'd like to propose. I don't care when we do it. I'd like to have everybody take an inventory of their PIs or other small board computer inventory. And I know 5150, that may be impossible for you, but and kind of go through what purpose they are serving on your in your household or work or whatever.
Excellent. Do you want me to start?
Sure.
I have one Pi. I have several Pis downstairs hosting sites for people, or Plateau. Then I've got one that does my main IMAP stuff. So I terminate a VPN connection to it, and then I do my personal email through that and have a local copy there. It acts as a termination point for basically everything coming in. And then in between, I have a little G-Netgear router that runs DDWRT. It's $25, and it's got a WAN port and a LAN port, and that filters traffic from the front to the back end. On the back end, all the kids have their own Raspberry Pi, which they use for doing Scratch, and it's connected up to the NAS, and they can they basically drop to a console and then navigate over to whatever program they want to watch, and then call up OXM player and play it like that. And then I have one here that monitors temperature. I have a few others I'm working on that is going to do some lighting control outside. In work, I have one similar setup that connects to the network, any network, goes through one of those little routers. I've got a stack of Raspberry Pis behind it. One has got a board on it that controls the traffic light. And when Jenkins runs sanity check jobs, and when the sanity check jobs fail, the traffic light turns red. And if it's green, we know everything's working and that the lab is working. And then there are four others in the stack that power displays, which I need to set up as web kiosks. And that's about it.
You mentioned one taking temperature. Are you actually gathering the data from that anyway?
Yeah, just dumping it to a text file, and I have an internal temperature sensor. These it's the same one that I think, who is it, Kevin? Somebody did a a rundown on it. So it's a, like, it uses a Dallas protocol, one wire protocol, and you put a resistor on, and then you can daisy chain as many as you like. And one is ensuring, you know, it's ensuring in a little case, and I just have it outside, hanging out of an air intake vent, and the other one is right in here, so I can compare the inside and outside temperatures. It's just more handy than anything else. I'm not really plotting it or anything. It's just for my own playing.
I'm doing the same. I'm pretty much like you. I've got one inside and one outside. They're two different types of sensors. One's like a little board that you plug into a breadboard and then jumper it, and it uses the IC bus. And then the other one is uses four wires with a resistor in line, and it does temperature and humidity. And I'm having it write to a, you know, CSV text file. But I'd like to get suggestions on how to, you know, display that data in a web interface of some kind, you know, or somehow to, just instead of looking at the raw data and using spreadsheets to, you know, manipulate the data, I'd like to be able to get it to where it's inputting into a database or something or another, to, so you have a web GUI to see it. And I also have a tipping bucket to measure rainfall. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, cool. How does that work? Have you that hooked up?
I 3D printed the parts after, you know, looking at others on the internet. So I did my own 3D printing and printed the parts and did my own calibrations and everything with it, and with the help of finding the, you know, some raw code, Python code through the interwebs, you know, and then with a lot of help from Jay Lindsay through, you know, on the Outcast Planet IRC, he's helped me debug it, and it works pretty well.
That would be a show, if you wouldn't mind. I personally would be very interested in that. I know I'm always looking for shows, but I'm genuinely interested in that one.
But it writes to CSV every minute. That way you can actually go through and see the amount of rainfall, you know, per minute, and calculate out, you know, per hour or whatever time frame you want. But it's I've checked it with a you know, it's the standard ring gauge that we have here at the house, and it's down to being pretty accurate, I think. So I'll just go through all my Pis. I have 5 Raspberry Pis. 2 of them are the Model Bs, not the B pluses, it's just the Model Bs. One of them is running Arch Linux and is doing this stream, and a couple podcasts use it. The Mintcast guys use it, and the Linux Slugcast guys use it to live stream podcasts from. The second one, B model, is running an IRC bot, which is Botly in the Outcast Planet channel. My third Pi is a Pi 2, and it's currently running ZoneMinder and it's running Ubuntu 16.04, and it's got ZoneMinder installed on it with 2 webcams connected to it in my garage area. I got one pointed at my monitor out there, so that when I work on, I have a side business of doing PC repairs, so if I have somebody's desktop computer out there running a long scan, I can just peer in from my desk in the house to that webcam and look at this monitor to tell when the process is done, what have you. And that one is also, then the fourth Pi is running my garage door opener. So it's got a web interface that I can open and close my garage door and monitor whether it's open or closed through my
through a web page that I can access on my phone, so I can open and close my garage door remotely, or monitor if it's open or closed at any time. So if I happen to get to work and somebody leaves and says, I can't remember if I shut the garage door or not, I can check on it and close it. And the fifth Raspberry Pi is doing all my weather monitoring, my temperature and rainfall monitoring.
Sorry, I couldn't press push to talk because I was soldering. That is impressive. I really like the garage door thing. You did a show on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I talked about it on one of the Lugcast episodes. Oh, and that one also controls a doorbell, because at the time we built this house 27 years ago, the third car garage, I call my man cave, where I work on computers and whatnot, I didn't think far enough ahead. I didn't think we'd ever need a garage door outside the service entrance outside there. So I got the bright idea of wiring up a button outside the door, running it to the Pi, and when somebody presses it, it SCPs commands to my home stereo media center, which is on most of the times, and it plays a chime through the house speakers and also in my office computer, so I can tell when somebody's at the side door.
Hey everyone, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, man.
Ah, perfect. This is Claudio.
Hi, Claudio.
How's everyone doing?
Happy New Year, Claudio.
Happy New Year, Claudio. Very impressive, Kevin.
Happy New Year to all of you. Still waiting for 2018 to roll in.
I've got a half an hour left.
I'm just here putting the finishing touches on tonight's dinner. And then just kind of waiting it out.
Now, the moral of the story is I've got a tombstone component here that is connecting. Should I spend 3 hours messing with it, or is it good enough?
What are you soldering there, Ken?
It's a component tester, and I put in a tiny, tiny, tiny little capacitor, and it's fine. It's making a connection, but it looks crap ugly under a microscope.
Do you plan on looking at it under a microscope frequently?
Yeah, but I don't know. That's the thing.
There's ugly and solid, and then there's pretty and no connection.
Yeah, and there's bugging me for the rest of my life, because I know it will be tombstone. Okay, I think we just got an answer there.
I believe so.
So there was talk about people doing stuff with their pies?
Yeah, I think at the time we're just taking inventory.
Got it. I'm not doing anything too fancy. I'm not doing anything fancy, really. I've got my old Model 1B, which I'm using just for LibreLec to run Kodi, just some stuff here in the living room. And then my son's Raspberry Pi 2 is here. He doesn't use it much, but we use it mainly for RetroPie.
Yeah, you guys are making me feel like a slacker. All I have is my Pi 3 setup, also running LibreLec and Kodi on my TV so I can stream some media.
Claudia, do you have push talk of?
Who's there? Bring him on.
I don't know about anybody else, but all this home automation stuff you hear about with products that you hear about, you know, on podcast or see on TV or whatever, every time I see one, I think, well, can I do that with a Pi so that I don't have to rely on a subscription to some service? And so that's how I get all my ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the very same thing.
Well, you know, what I like about the Pi and well, I have some others, is people tell me, well, you can't do that with a Pi or with a, I have an old Odroid XU4. That is the most surprising little board that I've ever played around with.
Well, I mentioned earlier today, I took the opportunity Black Friday to get a couple of the Google Home Minis for $25 at Walmart because I can't build anything that cheap. But you're right, as far as a trust issue, of course, the I guess the Google Home component software is open source since they released it. Well, somebody remind me. I know you could download it, put it on. I don't know if they open sourced it. I was thinking they did. But of course, you get the thing from Google. Are there binary blobs on there? Almost certainly. If the NSA comes to them and says, we want to record everybody and you can't tell anybody about it, whether they use a keyword or not, they're going to get stuck that way. Whereas if you build your own, and assuming the code is open source, and I think the Google is and the Alexa is not, then I guess you can be a little more sure. But again, it's the novelty of it and maybe the convenience, though I haven't really found a really solid use case for it yet. Versus how paranoid do you want to be, especially considering you're carrying a spy device around in your pocket all day long anyway.
So there was a Reddit post where some guy who claimed to be an Alexa engineer was talking about how they had done theirs. And basically it was, there's like 50 or 60K of memory, which is just enough to pick up Alexa. And then the couple of seconds that it takes for the rest of the device to boot to then have the actual voice recognition, which is then piped through, I think they said, Amazon servers. And they said you can prove this by basically disconnecting the internet. It wakes up to Alexa, but doesn't recognize anything else. And they said it was wired up, that the rest of the device is hardwired through the blue light. So again, according to them, they said there is no way they could activate something without people notifying it, knowing, because it would light up. Now, again, this is like some random guy on Reddit claimed it. So read into that what you will. But supposedly, if the guy actually knows what he's talking about, they supposedly there's no way of doing it. But they also claim you can check.
Yeah, I have a good friend that works for Amazon, and from everything he tells me, they do as much work as they have to attempt to be aware of how much data they have about people and steward it well. Whether or not they actually succeed, they do make big strides at not being creepy.
I kind of trust Google and to a certain extent Amazon, because if they got caught being creepy, then all of a sudden all these things are going to get tossed in the bin. Well, maybe not. But at least some of them would be there. It'd be a big scandal for them.
So we all,
I don't trust our government organizations behind them to not be creepy.
And did you throw all your computers in the bin that have that Intel Linux operating system running on the Ring Zero?
No. And in fact, I won't give any details. I think I know somebody who is on that team. So I trust him fairly well not to do creepy things.
It's the other big difference. The other big difference I see between Amazon and Google is Google only makes money by selling me ads. Amazon makes money from me buying things from them. Their motivations are slightly different.
Yeah, the thing there, though, is, yeah, you're right. They make money from the adverts. So that means the quality of the targeting needs to be that's where their value is. That's where they maximize the potential of one advert as to how many relevant people's eyeballs see it. So therefore, data collection as at the very heart of that determines who you target.
The real difference is Google knows how to use the data that they collect. Amazon doesn't. Amazon shows me stuff I've already bought and says, you might be interested in this based on your recent purchases. They don't do a very good job of it.
I have been led to believe that is deliberate.
Why? Why would you do that deliberately?
Because doing a better job would be repeat. How would you feel if you bought a clock for the wall that took two AA batteries? Amazon knows, you bought a clock for a wall. The AA batteries in that clock last about 6 months. And then 5.5 months later, you got an email saying, hey, we're guessing the batteries in your clock are about to run out. You want some more?
You know what?
People would be a lot more. That would be useful, but creepy as hell.
I wouldn't find that. If I knew when I was buying the thing, there was an option to say, remind me to, remind me of scheduled maintenance. And just reading it would be, we'll remind you of when the guarantee goes, remind you to, I don't know, that you need to change your car. You need to change the oil. We'll start. Are you interested in this sort of stuff? If they were upfront about it, I wouldn't have a problem with that because I know where the data is coming from and I know how they're using it.
Oh, yeah. If they were upfront about it, I've even said, I think the coolest thing would be, oh, we see that you're buying a wall clock that takes AA batteries. Would you like to subscribe and save to AA batteries so you don't
exactly
run out?
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. In a few months,
where they don't tell you they're doing it, and then before the batteries run out, you get an advert saying, hey, would you like batteries for that clock we know that you bought?
Yeah, yeah, that would be creepy, yeah.
The key.
So it's all a matter of tation.
Yeah, the key here, though, is whether it's about something that's of use to you as the consumer, or whether it's, or who's it serving. If you're talking about selling batteries, then that's a legitimate thing, but it benefits the battery salesperson. If you're talking about reminding someone of their warranty's going to run out, that's of value to the end user. They now know that. That's what I'm saying. It's about who it's of benefit to.
Well, but telling me that the device I bought is about to run out of batteries and I should probably get some more is of value to me. It's also of value to the person selling the batteries, but my clock is going to run out of batteries and I should probably buy more. It does provide me value. It also provides them value.
It would be nice if there was a opt-in or opt-out of what services you wanted from Google or Amazon.
Absolutely. And you know what else would be useful is, don't show me this ads anymore because I've, you know, if you're getting any of these recommended ads because of you, there should always be the option, don't show me this again, and here's the reason why.
They've got that in Gmail to a certain degree.
I actually worded that wrong in hindsight. It's not about what's of useful to me as the consumer. It's about the assumption is everything you tell me is of use to you. Thing is, also make it of use to me.
And I don't think the battery thing would be all that creepy if it were done the right way. If for instance, they knew that the batteries were going to run out in 6 months, if they just sent me a coupon in 6 months' time, or that's what they showed me down the bottom of the screen in the suggestion part, that would make sense. The thing that doesn't make sense is if I go and buy a mouse, for the next 3 weeks, it says based on your recent purchases, and they'll show me mice for 3 weeks. So I'm not interested
Absolutely.
In mice after I just bought one.
And better yet, they'll show you the mouse you just bought. Hey, you bought this mouse. Do you want another one?
I wonder if that kind of thinking, if that kind of algorithm was created essentially by people who were visualizing, quote, shopping, unquote, as grocery shopping. As you buy this brand of cornflakes, you buy this brand of loaf, you buy this brand of milk. It's an ongoing consumable that if you've bought it once, then there's a good chance you've bought it before, and there's a good chance you'll buy it again. So it's more of a grocery type thing that's been applied to one-off purchases.
Maybe, but up until very recently, Amazon hasn't sold groceries. They've only sold durable goods. And the implication there is that they're durable and they'll last and you won't have to buy another one anytime soon. Unless they send out their little drones to steal them when you're not looking.
You mean the gremlins, clearly.
Yeah, that could happen too. Since it was just Christmas.
Well, what bothers me more is the co-mingling of things like Amazon and your social media sites. Because... you look at something on Amazon, whether you buy it or not, you see it on Facebook for the next 3 weeks. The other thing being that they're, you have things pop up into both G+ and Facebook. Would you like to follow this person? And the only way, the only way that they could associate this person with you is if Facebook and Google were sharing their contact, your personal contact lists with each other. And you know, I prefer to keep those worlds separate. I mean, I'm on Facebook as the name that's on my birth certificate, and I'm on Google Plus as 5150. And there are people on one side of that, you know, that if they saw a post I made on one or the other, they would have, you know, it would be confusing to them. So I would much rather keep those two worlds separate, and I do not like to see them being commingled.
Solved. I just stay off of social media altogether.
Dudes, yeah, I have to go do the family thing. Talk to you in a while.
Chip, chip, cheerio.
Well, I think that's a good point there as far as the commingling of the data, because as we know from this recent credit debacle, there is total commingling of the data. And when Google drove around to make its map data with its cars, it was sucking up everything it could in violation of lots of federal laws, to the point where our attorney general went before Congress and said they were, to quote him, too big to jail. They have a blanket right to do whatever they want with our data.
Are you cycling your MAC addresses when you're on these different social media platforms?
Well, I'm not on any of those social media platforms, but it doesn't matter if I'm on the internet and they can suck up whatever they want and they can sell it to any partner they want, then they can do that and we give them the right to, because we won't file charges. We assume that they're operating within some sort of rules, but there are none.
Yeah, I was just getting to the point that there you can't run, you can't hide. All the internets belong to your earthly overlords.
Yes.
Is now a good time for me to jump in and say hi?
Greetings.
Hello.
Happy New Year, Mrs. Ogre.
I haven't talked to any of you in forever.
We're always here this time, same time every year.
How's Captain Underpants doing?
I'm actually using his headset because I left mine at work like a dodo.
It's for the birds.
Yeah, Minnie's Oak is not so mini anymore. He is 6'5".
Holy smokes.
That doesn't count as mini anymore.
No, and we're struggling to figure out what to call our other little one who just turned 4.
6'5" is like a mini Shaq.
Yeah, I'll give you that one, Pokey. Folks, I've got to jump off, so Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lyle.
Glad we got to say hi.
Yes. Yes, I am.
So what, five minutes for Europe to go?
Hey, Klaatu, are you still by the computer, or are you just recording it away?
Klaatu never goes AFK. He needs to get AFK more. Hopefully he is.
As I say, I think we'd be hearing from him if he was anywhere near the mic.
I figured. He keyed up earlier, about an hour or so ago.
He also keyed up at the beginning, the starting line. He was off the block, quick.
Did the multiplayer game ever happen?
That's why I was wondering, I was going to ask.
That's probably what he's doing. Zero Interface RPG.
I heard him sign off, and he made a comment about poor organization, and perhaps we'll do it another time.
Poor organization regarding...
The game.
Ah.
Sorry, Brian.
He keeps everything in his head, too. Apparently, he had double booked. I tried to book a Casper and Klaatu podcast of sorts, and he was like, I might have double booked it. So he's a man in high demand.
Yeah, he had to run to New Zealand just to get some breathing room.
Just to get that sweet, sweet fresh air. Smoke with the wizards.
He first caught my attention with his car camping episodes.
Yeah, urban camping.
Oh my.
What's that all about? If you could, I haven't heard those.
Klaatu spent a couple of years choosing to be homeless, and he did a long series on how you can make that work and it's beneficial.
It was fascinating.
Life hacks.
Yeah, it was life hacks to an extreme. It was, I think it was a 6-part. Was it 3 or 6 parts? Does anybody remember?
No, I don't recall.
But I don't remember what I had for dinner last night, so oh well.
Yeah, if memory serves, it was like 6 1-hour episodes, and I don't believe he trod upon the same ground twice. It was all new stuff every time. It was fast. It made it look really appealing. I wanted to give it a try.
It's popular where I live. A lot of my friends are living out of their vans out in the woods. It gets rough occasionally, but the weather's just so pleasant.
Yeah, I actually read something where somebody did an extreme life hack slash research live documentary kind of thing. They wrote a book about it, but what they did was they did not use money for, I think it was 2 years. So everything they did, they could not use cash. And they found that they were much happier.
Well, happiness is just a state of mind.
Indeed.
Very true.
And fact, speaking of which,
my happiness entails me having a house, a shower, and a flushing toilet.
All important things.
It's time for another Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to the Euros. The, some would say, are arguably the inventors of the EDM movements.
You guys have no idea how much electronic stuff, wires, and crap my son is pulling out of his bedroom.
I don't want to speak.
Happy New Year.
There's wires and there's spaghetti monsters all over the place.
Not actually pulling the wires out of the walls.
Just in the abandoned, buildings.
These were wires not connected to the house at all.
These are wires spun by the electric spider.
The electric spider. Sounds like a new band. Let's start it.
Well, folks, I'm going to step away for a few minutes. There's an errand in town I need to run before the place closes, so see you back here in an hour, hour and a half, and I'll be monitoring on my on the stream in the meantime.
At the Packy 50?
The what?
The Packy? The package store?
You caught me. Yeah, I didn't get in town early enough yesterday evening, so I'd like to not got enough for tonight, but you know, they'll be closed tomorrow all day, so
gotta stock up.
Yeah, I made a booze run myself earlier today.
I made a non-booze run just a little while ago.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome from the future.
Happy
Welcome to the world of tomorrow. The future is now in the off-world colonies. All right, guys, I'm going out to fire off some fireworks. Talk to you later. Bye.
See you, Ken. Happy New Year. Hey, Claudio. I didn't notice your key up before. Happy New Year, bud.
Happy New Year there, man. Long time.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Just trying to get used to this Plumble client on Android. Had to set my phone to stop auto switching from portrait to landscape because it would keep the push-to-talk activated.
Oh, yeah. You still lighting the keys on fire?
When I have the chance, I'll sit there and I'll sit down and work on some stuff, but lately, it's just been really busy with work and just life in general.
Yeah, same here. I know what you mean.
Yeah, we're just putting the finishing touches on the main course for tonight. And then soon enough, everybody should be coming over.
Oh, cool. You're having family over or friends? Or?
Well, just my dad. And it's my sons are here, and then my stepson and his girlfriend, and the two of us here.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think last time you and I spoke, all your kids were still at home.
Yeah, they were last time. Well, they may have been at their mom's house, but they're with us this year. So we've got this table all set. We've got all the food ready. So now it's just a matter of everybody showing up.
Outstanding. I became a father-in-law and a grandpa this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Not necessarily in that order, actually, but still.
Soak and I are going to have a daughter-in-law in a couple of years. The proposal has been made.
Oh, very nice. Congratulations.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, Mini Soak isn't so mini anymore, as I heard and seen.
No, he is absolutely ginormous, and he's still the biggest pain in my butt in the planet. He can still infuriate me in 2 seconds. But he's one of the few that can then make me laugh 3 seconds after that. So I guess there's an upside there.
Yeah, I hear you three times over.
We absolutely adore our future daughter-in-law. She's one hell of a cake maker. She's going to have her own business. In fact, she already does, really. She's an amazing cake decorator. So it's been very, very fun to have birthday parties around here since he met her.
So is she doing her own wedding cake then?
She might be. I don't know. She might have enough other planning to do on her own, but we'll see.
That's very cool. My wife has been decorating cakes for a few years now, just for family and stuff. And it's incredible how much equipment you need for that. And the shaped tins that you bake the cake in. Unbelievable how much those things cost.
It really is amazing. And then you start getting into fondant and all the little cutters for the fondant and all the little molds for the fondant. And it just gets extravagant and expensive, but she really does such a good job with all of it. I have no issues, you know, supplying her with those things when her birthday comes around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's a great, great gift.
But she's made some just awesome cakes for this family and other people, too. If you guys ever get a chance, look her up on Facebook under the Angry Cupcake.
My wife, you know, buys the cake pans, whatever the kid, you know, nephews and nieces and stuff, whatever they want for their birthday. She'll try to, you know, make that cake. So she's done, you know, Lightning McQueen and a bunch of others. And one of the nephews asked for Mickey Mouse this most recently. And the Mickey Mouse cake that she liked, the pan that she liked, is discontinued. And they're selling on eBay used for like $60. And it's incredible.
Yeah, our littlest, our youngest, just had her fourth birthday party, and she had an Octonauts cake made. And then the year before that, she had a Minnie Mouse, complete with big fondant bow and everything. I've had a cow for one of my birthday cakes. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones she's done, but she's just done some amazing work.
Is that a cow from Cow and Chicken?
From Cow and Chicken. I don't know if it's from Cow and Chicken, but as in the cows you milk on the farm, yes.
Have you not heard of the cartoon show from the 90s or the 2000s, maybe? Cow and Chicken.
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Oh, see, you know then, Zoke. I don't.
Mama had a chicken. Mama had a cow. Dad was proud. He didn't care how.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
It's
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've used to watch it.
I was the kid that watched Voltron. In fact, I had a Voltron birthday cake just this year.
Oh, where's Taj when you need him?
I got a special message from my sons. Ready? Go for it.
Happy New Year!
Of course, my youngest has to be funny.
Well, Merry Christmas to him and Happy New Year to the rest.
Yep, got it.
Christmas is better than New Year's, in my opinion, too.
Well, Happy Easter. See, don't say I'm not ahead of these things. This is like 4 months away. You can't be any earlier than that, surely.
They can keep Valentine's Day, though, right?
But Mrs. Zilk, we don't have a 24-hour Christmas show.
I was in Walmart.
I was going to say, why not? We need one. Hurry up. Get on the ball.
Oh, this one show's enough, believe me.
Get on the cron job.
I was in Walmart. They have stuff out for Valentine's Day already.
This is why people hate going to Walmart, okay? That and everyone's IQ drops 10 points the minute they pull into the parking lot.
I don't,
but at least you can go in your pajamas.
I don't hate going to Walmart anymore. I just don't go at all.
Me either. I make Zoke go.
Yeah, but it makes me feel so much better about myself walking around seeing these other weirdos.
The last time I went into Walmart, there was almost bloodshed.
I was going to Walmart one time and I'm pushing my cart on the left side of the aisle. Guy's coming towards me and he like looks, sees me going on. He's like, what the hell are you doing? You English or something? He's like, yeah. What, really? Yeah. Ended up having this whole 5-minute discussion about the fact that I was English and he thought it was really cool.
What's funniest about this story, I was actually with you that time where I heard about it, but what's funniest about this whole thing is we ran into the guy a couple weeks later and all the two of them could do as they walked past each other was laugh. But what was hysterical was that the guy was just saying it in jest because, of course, Zoke was driving down the wrong side of the road, the wrong side of the aisle. And he was just being silly as he walked by him, fully not expecting him to be at all English.
This reminds me of a Douglas Adams thing where, if anyone who's read The Salmon of Doubt will know this, it's where he had the exact same experience with someone else at a train station in England. Douglas Adams, author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he lived half his life in America and half his life in England. And they came back to England. They was at a train station waiting on a train, and the train's a while away yet. So he thinks, right, I'll go to the little cafe, get a coffee, and I'll get some Jaffa cakes. So he does that, and he sits down, he reads his paper, and another guy sits down, and they sit on the same table as him, shares the same table, and starts reading his paper. And then this other dude opens the Jaffa cakes and has one of the Jaffa cakes, eats one of the Jaffa cakes. And I was like, what? Did I say anything? Right, so being English, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to pretend that it didn't happen. And then I'm going to take my packet of Jaffa cakes and then take the second one and pretend, just ignore the fact that they've been opened. So I did that, and a big smile on at the same time with this guy, and he never batted an eyelid. And then on back and forth, he had one, I had one, he had one, I had one. At the end of the packet, we're both glaring at each other. And then the announcer came, and his train was arriving. So he gets up and leaves, and he loves his newspaper. What's underneath his newspaper? My packet of Jaffa cakes, totally unopened. So someone else in England has got the exact same experience as me.
That's pretty awesome. As far as Walmart goes, there's only like two or three things that I still prefer to get there over online. And actually, some of them I don't even like. The pocket knives, I go there to try them out and hold them if they have them there, but I don't buy them there. But pants, because I can try them on, and ammunition, and that's it. Everything else I buy online now.
Most places make clothing purchases so easy to return these days that even if you buy them, try them on, and they don't fit, I just return them when they don't fit. I do not shop for clothes in the store anymore. I hate going to the mall. I've never liked the mall, and Walmart's not a whole lot better. I mean, I almost got into a knockdown drag-out fight with a lady in one of those little handicap carts because she was yelling at someone else's teenager for talking over the top of her head. I don't know why, but it just infuriated me that she would think that this kid was being rude to her on purpose. And then she told me to mind my own business. And I'm like, then why are you airing it out in Walmart? Anyway, I don't go to Walmart.
Yeah, I try to stay out now.
Zook's a much nicer person.
But when I do have to go to Walmart, I always park by the auto center because that register has no lines and you can get in and out of there real quick.
Well, that was a conversation killer.
Hey, Pokey, you were asking about Klaatu's episodes on Interface Zero?
No, I had asked if he had run his RPG that he wanted to do, and I was also wondering about his urban camping episodes, how many of those were. I should have probably just...
Gotcha. Yeah, I saw that the last... in the Interface Zero series was posted. Looking forward to listening to that.
Speaking of conversation killers, what happened is I completely lost my mumble screen. I had to get Zook in here to help me find it.
Yeah, sometimes when mumble minimizes, it minimizes to the notification area.
That's exactly where it was. He knew where to find it, though.
That's what they all say.
Hey-o!
No, I was wrong. There are not six episodes. There are seven episodes of Urban Camping.
Ah, I tuned right back in at the right time. So what's going down? We got some dead air berries.
It'll happen. Just enjoy the moment.
The sound of silence. Are we waiting for something?
No, I think that my boys are actually playing an online game while on here, which is why they're distracted.
They're playing with Klaatu.
Oh, here's something strange I've never seen before. My chat window in Mumble has no input box.
Oh, great. So it's going to pull that on me next?
Could be. I think I'm going to have to restart it. I'll be right back.
I'm going to play it.
Gotta love technology.
Play a little bit if nobody's got topics or things to discuss.
Well, I was just going to say, I got to love technology. I mean, I was doing more of a super user role at my job until recently, and then I was promoted to finance analyst. And after having to deal with the whole financial end of the business on more extreme levels, I think I'd rather go back to technology.
We were talking, Ken and I were talking with a pirate at the beginning of the podcast, and seemed like he was a little turned off by the technology, and that's why he decided to work on his steam engine powered boat, which may or may not be a yellow submarine.
You know, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I'd heard some, I don't know who it was that said it, but it sort of resonated with what I've seen, is generally speaking, obviously there's always exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, what this was saying was women tend to like technology for what it enables them to do, whereas men tend to like the technology for the technology. Like they care about the megapixels, about the gigahertz, all that kind of stuff. Whereas women are more concerned about, this helps me, this allows me to send photographs to my sister. It's that sort of human connection. It's like, what does this enable me to do, rather than what it actually is?
That's because women get shit done.
We don't have time to do it any other way, do we? I mean, I get both aspects. I really like the whole new gadget, ooh, let me try this, ooh, that's new and shiny, let's play with it for a while type of attitude. I totally get that. But I also don't keep anything around if it's not functional, typically, because I just don't have time to just sit and play. I work more than 40 hours a week. I have a toddler and a teenager in the same house. I just, free time is not something I have a lot of, which is why I quit doing my silly little podcast I was doing. But yeah, I like my technology aspect of the job better, because there was a finite set of rules. It was always one way. You it was this way, or it just didn't work. Those are the only two options. You did it right or you did it wrong. With finance and what I'm doing in finance right now, it's oftentimes your best educated guess. And I just prefer to have set rules.
I'm told in finance, a lot of times you got to look the other way when you sign it. And that's the best way to do it.
Well, I haven't had a whole lot of that, but I know what you mean by that, because they want you to project what you're going to make, but they don't want you to overshoot it too far, and they don't want you to come in too low. And you're looking at them going, and I'm supposed to guess what I'm supposed to do this time next year when I don't know who's moving in, who's moving out. You know, it just gets complicated. And you're like, how do you best guess that?
Aliens understand in your earthly battles that the same kind of thing happens in body counts. In, say, Vietnam, for example, their success in the way they'd report it back to the states, they'd say, oh, well, how many did you kill? And they'd say, I don't know, like 20. They'd be like, yeah, no, that's a bit too right. Let's make it 17. No round numbers.
That's exactly how I feel most days when I have to go through all the things I'm doing at work. And I don't mind. I'm getting used to it. I'm learning how to do it better. But you take me out of a situation where there were finite rules, where I was either winning or I was losing. And if I was losing, I knew why and how I could be winning again. With what I'm doing now, I don't have that luxury. And I don't know that I like being out of that comfort zone.
Well, it's good to hear that you have options, and you should make the most of those options. I want to break it here live and direct. I was in a environment which was not conducive to anything. It was a very dysfunctional environment. And I describe it to my friends and family aliens that it was like being in a fishbowl. You don't really know until you're out. And I had the blessing in disguise of being let go under extremely suspicious circumstances. Things were going out. Things were going down. Internet was going down for the entire alien empire at that we were supporting, and email was going down for long times. And I was like, oh man, people are really messing up. I wasn't involved. I was just a little alien, little speck of dust they'd kick around. So even though that the little speck of dust was doing probably five jobs, and then come back from alien Thanksgiving and got let go. And it was very, very strange. And I even asked the alien HR. I said, wait, what did I do something? What was going on? Fortunately, up here in the stratosphere, there's this thing called unemployment benefits. And I filed for that just to find out what they could find out, because I couldn't find out anything. And I just went to my galactic post office box. And what did I see in the mail? I saw some alien cash money. Alien cash money. Got it. So that just confirmed that that I was let go, and it did not fall under the alien rules of letting someone go.
I know that when I decided to take this promotion, that I wasn't sure I would do very well in it, but that I knew aspects of it already, but just didn't know the others, and was really nervous and just uncomfortable. But I just, after discussing it with Zoak, we figured, well, you might as well try it. What do you have to lose? Because there's been some turmoil where I'm working right now anyway. So I said, well, I'm either out of a job or I'm not, but I'm kind of looking at that same thing if I stay in a stagnant position as well. So I decided to take the leap and give it a shot. And it's not been too bad, but like I said, I'm just not comfortable yet. And I've been with the company I'm with. It'll be 19 years in May. So I was doing the same thing for 18 years. So there's little wonder why I'm feeling like a fish out of water.
So you just started something new after being somewhere for 18 years.
Well, I'm still with the same company. I didn't change companies. I just changed jobs within my facility. So, and I was already doing half of what I'm doing now, I was already doing anyway, but I stepped out of one role and fully into the other. So instead of having one job description and doing three jobs, I have a new job description and I'm doing half of what I used to be doing plus more. Does that make sense?
I'm kind of understanding yes, basically, yeah.
So there were just aspects of my previous position that I miss, but that I was really comfortable with. But now with this new position, there's stuff that I'm just not, I don't know it yet, and I'm still learning it. And after doing the same thing for so long, for 18 years, to be doing something new after all this time, you just aren't comfortable. And I'm not used to being uncomfortable because I've been doing the same thing for 18 years. So it's just really weird.
That's, I've been thought about 18 years or whatever in one role. I spent the best part of 2 decades unemployed. So when all you guys were talking to me before, I was unemployed. I couldn't find a job. I couldn't get anyone to give me a chance. That's when I disappeared from the internet, was when someone finally gave me a chance. So yeah, it's going from being unemployed to actually having a job. Yeah, it's a change, and I can imagine that going from one job for 18 years, whatever, and then and another one. I look at that the same. I'm still getting used to the fact that I'm employed. Someone actually pays me money.
See, that's a congratulations you need right there, because that's a long time to go without being able to find somebody who'd give you a shot. That's I'm really, really glad that you got that shot. It's going well for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be 3 years on the start of February, and I've been there, and yeah, it's almost like it's given me the kind of belief that, yeah, I can do something, that everything is sort of leading on from that. I've got a whole new, there's no religious aspect to this, but it does feel like I've been born again, without any religious overtones to that.
Yes, and no religious overtones in what I was saying. Aliens don't subscribe to any. We're a religious of no religion.
Well, I do. It's okay. As long as that doesn't bother you guys, that doesn't bother me that you don't have any. But no, that's really cool. I'm really glad that you, after 3 years, you're pretty well set there now. I would guess. I mean, I would assume that would work for where we're at. That's really, really good.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's sort of different outlook. I don't care about money now. As long as I've got enough that I've always got enough for food, I've always got enough for rent, I've always got enough for electricity, I've always got enough to get to my work. Money really doesn't entice me at all. I now want to achieve something at work, and I think that's where I'm outgrowing where I am just now. But I'm with this autism thing, the ASD thing, I'm sort of looking at that and thinking, right, 2018, I'm now going to really focus on where I can really get job satisfaction, where I can really achieve something. Even if I'm earning the same money as I am just now, I don't care. I want to achieve something, you know. I don't know where I was going with that. Sorry, I'll step back.
No, I think I agree with you, because money is important to the extent that you can provide for yourself, or in our case, provide for the family and make sure everybody's comfortable and happy and healthy. But I don't think a little discomfort every now and again hurts anybody. So I don't think that, you know, you need to strive to be so well off that nobody knows how to suffer a little. Because I think that's good for them in the long run, to some extent, as long as it's not extreme or extremely long term. But in our house, we've always looked at each other when things have gotten tight and said, well, nobody's going hungry. That's a plus.
Even aliens understand that a certain man who has been getting praise, dear praise, from a dear leader of the United or Divided States, Frederick Douglass, he's been making the rounds. And he said, without struggle, there is no progress. And I look forward to meeting him.
Well, everybody, I'm going to step off for a little bit. Got some preparations to do here. Got to get myself ready. Wishing you all a very happy new year and a wonderful 2018. So I'll try and be on before then or a little after, or if not, when the sun rises.
Yeah, it's been nice hearing your voice again, Claudio. If I don't see you later on, have a good new year.
Happy new year.
Likewise. Happy new year.
Happy new year, guys.
All right. Gordon, what you were saying, from being unemployed to them being employed, it's quite a transition. For me, I've been employed all of my alien life, even before aliens are allowed to work. There's some provisions where you can get in and start on with little alien jobs like rock mining on the dark side of the moon. But I'm used to working. I need something to do. I can't not be doing something. So to be unemployed, it was full throttle on everything.
No, I think when it came to employment for me, the first job I got out of high school, I had no idea, absolutely no clue what I wanted to be. In second year, we pick it. So you got primary school and then high school in the UK. And high school begins at age 11, I think. And that's first year, something like that.
Yeah, 11.
Yeah, something like that. And 12 is second year. The only choice you've got, other than the basic curriculum, is, in our case, we had a choice between Latin and German, and that's a whole different story for me. Third year, you pick your subjects. That's when you want to get an idea of what you want to be. And at the time, I had no clue whatsoever. I decided to pick lots of technical subjects, like craft and design, technical drawing. Turns out, not my forte at all. I was advised against it, seriously advised against it. You want to spread your talents so you get an experience of everything. Nope, I did not listen. I did that. The first job, I left school. Well, basically, I dropped out quite early on. Hardly anything to do with qualifications. Left school, and the first job I got was in sales. And that's the only thing I knew how to do. So every time I was unemployed, that's the only thing I would look at was sales, without any clue at all that it was sales that was destroying me. And it's just not my thing at all. But by the time I'd figured that out, I'd already had like 9 or 10 jobs and been sacked from all of them, all sales.
Well, Rutiger's going to be joining us hopefully soon. I wished him safe travels in his galactic pod, which will be should be here soon, and I think he will be able to relate to the slow death of a salesman, if I understand correct.
Well,
I'm sorry, Gordon, go ahead, I won't interrupt.
No, I was going to say, I wasn't a salesman, and that's the point. The only reason I kept going for sales jobs was because the first job that I ever had when I left school was sales. I had no idea at all what I could do, what I wanted to do, what I was interested in. I had no clue of any of that. All I knew of was, well, I've done sales. I must be able to do sales. So, because I got that job, I'll go for sales again. And it took me quite a few jobs to realize that actually I hate sales. And that was where the problem was. The end point of that though, was by the time I realized that, I had such a bad employment history that when I was filling out a CV, when I was filling out an application form, I was sunk. The amount of time, the amount of jobs you've had in that same time, and why did you leave this one? I've been sacked from the vast majority of jobs I've ever had because they were sales jobs and I had no interest in sales. Thing is, that's the thing that you go to a job interview and that's the thing, that's the hurdle that you've got to get over to get someone else to give you a chance.
That's with the interview process, you're that's a sales pitch right there. You got to have confidence. I had the what was described as beaten dog syndrome from my previous employment. Those are not my words. Those were my direct manager's words. He said, "Oh, I know about this. This is beaten dog syndrome because no matter what I did, should have never worked for the Grays. They're a homogeneous group of all gray male aliens." And it was just bad. I anytime a different type of gray, say a female gray or a gray of a different complexion would come in, I would say, oh, please hire them. Please hire them. That'll take care of half the horrible jokes I'm hearing. But every time they wouldn't get hired. And that was just another aspect to it.
I think what you went through, Gordon, was a lot like what I was going to end up going through if I hadn't had my husband here to convince me to step out on that limb and try something new. Because I had been in the same job for so long and I was good at it, but I was never going to get to do anything new unless I took that chance and that opportunity. And I would have ended up just doing the same old thing for another 18 years before I retired if I hadn't had someone to tell me, try it. What do you have to lose?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I was at the point for quite a few years when most of you guys knew me. I was basically unemployed for so long. Like, job interviews, that's not going to happen. And now I realize where the ASD came in as well. Yeah, that did not help me at all in interviews, which was compounding the issue. But yeah, see, you live and learn, and if you, that's the whole point of life, right? You change, you learn stuff, and you change.
Here's to a better year.
Exactly, and I've had a lot of people tell me recently that if you don't change, you die. And I mean, that's kind of a morbid way of saying it.
Those who are resistant to change are destined to perish.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier on. I mean, basically, after this autism thing, my 2017, I'm just checking it right here, my 2017 was the start of a life-changing thing then this year as well, 2018 coming up. That's where I'm basically going to evolve. I'm going to become someone else. And I know that it's sort of a bit pretentious. I'm sorry. but I haven't seen you for a few years, so sorry. My bad.
Do you find that knowing now that there's some Asperger's involved, do you find that knowing that is beneficial and helpful to you with interactions going forward? Does it help you keep in mind specific things or assist in any way?
Oh, yes. That's the last few months, 5-6 months maybe. I've become aware of so many things. And some of the things, it's almost like you've got to pick your battles. Anyone who knows me in person, which is no one here, basically, sorry, so you just need to take my word for it. I cannot hold eye contact. I just can't. I can look at you, but it'll be a glance and I'll be looking away again. I'll be looking over your shoulder, even though I'm talking to you. I cannot do anything other than that. I wasn't even aware of that until this year. So there are various other things. I'm 44, I'll be 45 in January. Up until this year, until sort of halfway through this year, I have been living a completely different life. And until this thing's been awakened, and I'm reassessing my entire life through this new lens, as well as trying to sort of figure out, like, this type of thing helps soothe the symptoms, or this other type of thing, it helps trigger them or whatever, and then build my world around that. But yeah, that's been the change, basically.
Well, I think that's awesome then. I mean, if I can, after you explained it, I can see how it would help to know. I guess it's harder to fight a battle if you know what battle you're supposed to be fighting, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm now aware of if I'm starting to get into an argument with someone, it's entirely possible that my brain has interpreted things wrong. And I'm looking. I'm aware of that. I'm conscious of that. Or if someone says, "Oh, this it didn't happen like this. It happened like such and such." Yeah. Now I can see. Yeah. Maybe I'm the one in the wrong. Like the whatever electrodes go from my ears to my brain or whatever it is. I remember things slightly different, or I interpret things slightly different. And I know that if I'm getting into a downward spiral with someone where it's getting more and more angry and sarcastic and aggressive and just sort of snapping back at each other, as soon as I can sort of detect that, I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, maybe that's my fault. Let's just sort of step back and right, go back to square one. What did you say? What did I say? How did we start this?
I think that everybody in this world, especially in this country, needs to do that exact same thing. Asperger's or no Asperger's. I am so tired of people passing other people off as stupid just because they don't agree. I don't know about anybody else who's listening to this who's in the U.S., but it's getting old. But that is certainly a lesson that all of us can stand to learn. Just in general, I think that's a big disconnect in this world these days, no matter what. Did I kill the conversation twice? I'm getting good at that.
No, that actually brings me on to another wee announcement as well. A lot of people, hang on, I might as well start with this. I'm a stoner again. I'm a fucking stoner again. For so long, I was a stoner. I was also a smoker of cigarettes. And I hated the cigarettes, I hated the tobacco, I hated the nicotine. I tried so hard to quit, and I eventually did quit.
I did too.
Right, I've now stopped smoking officially, over 10, 11 years. It's been a long time.
For me it's relatively recent. I quit in May, but I quit, and I'm not doing it, and I'm awesome about it.
Well, well done, congratulations. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I know how hard it is to quit smoking. I've done that. For me, it came to the point where, what do you want more? Do you want to either stop smoking more than you want to keep smoking like weed? And I was desperate to stop smoking. So I thought, I can't do either. I can't do any. So I stopped smoking. That was great. And then up until a few months ago as well, I thought, you know what, I'm going to try. I've not had any weed or any grass or anything like that for a long, long time. Tried that a few months ago, just out of curiosity, without any nicotine or anything, just pipes and bongs and things. Oh my fucking God, I'm a stoner again. I am so a stoner again.
Yeah, that's something I never really got into. And considering my addictive personality with tobacco and caffeine, I've decided I'm not going to go down that road or any other road in that department because I had a hard enough time with the caffeine and the nicotine. But, you know, there's certain things about it. I don't know. It's been illegal in this country for so long. So much of my life has been so illegal. And in the state I live in, even having a tiny, tiny bit was a felony, and you could like have your kids taken away and stuff like that. It's just not something I ever entertained.
Yeah, I understand why different governments treat it differently to some degree, but Yeah, there's some states like just as you're describing there, like how that's insane. That's utterly insane for what weed is. That's nuts. I understand that it's totally true and totally realistic, but that is nuts. That is so nuts.
Yeah, it's really no different than alcohol. I mean, there are some differences, yes, but as far as how your body reacts to it and what you go through when using it, there's probably not a whole lot of difference in that department. It should be treated just the same as they do alcohol, in my personal opinion. And I think that in lots of respects, in a lot of places in the United States, it's starting to loosen up and get a little better in that department. But because it's been so taboo and so evil for so long to so many of us, it's still one of those areas that we're just like, you all just completely steer clear of that. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what this has given me, I have been an unbelievably creative since I've started back on the weed. It's unbelievable. I've come up with so much good stuff. My plans for 2018 are heavily involving weed, a lot of it, and copious amounts.
You do realize that creativity is still there, even when you're not using, right? Because you need to realize that.
Oh, I know all that. I know all that. It's just the weed makes it so much better.
Inhibitions. It's all about inhibitions. You got to get rid of those inhibitions.
I'm doing that. See, that's why we need a doctor to medically prescribe this. Then that way it's everything's all good and dandy.
Well, you know, here I am preaching to you, and there's lots of inhibitions I won't let go of.
Sorry, I was putting my lighter down every time I was talking to you there. I'm just having another pipe as we speak.
Does it make me a bad mom if I just had my teenage son go get the rum down from the top of the cabinet because I couldn't reach and he had to make me a drink?
Well, this is the modern-day equivalent of the Victorians sending the kids down the mines.
I'm too busy playing. So I feel like answering her. She shouted a question at me across the room, and I'm going to answer through here.
Which is silly, because they couldn't hear me shout to you across the room.
I know.
Do you realize I just posted an IRC in part... What is it called? I can't remember what room I'm in. Ogcast.
How many drinks have you had?
Not enough. Anyway, I was in Ogcast Planet. I just posted in there because every time I go into Ogcast Planet, nobody is talking to anybody. So I just put up in there, how sad it is it when you log into IRC and then say nothing. Guess what I got? Crickets. No one said anything.
But are they not talking or are they just messing with you?
They're not talking to anybody. They're just all logged in there. There's like no conversation happening at all. No one's logging in. No one's logging out. Nobody's talking to anybody. They're just there. They're lurkers.
Lurkers are people too, you know.
Okay, but I prefer my people to conversate, lurking or not lurking. Just hi would be nice.
Lurkers lives matter.
Someone say you hi. Know,
I'm close to you, Zoke. I can throw something heavy at your head. The madder you make me, the better my aim.
There's at least a wall in the way.
I can make it in there. I haven't had that many rum and cokes. Maybe you better hit your stepson there up to make him a little stronger so I can't.
You know, it's a rum that's harmless. It's a coke that gets you flat on your backside.
Shh, don't tell anyone. They still let me drink coke at work. Just know, I still listen to every one of your HPR episodes every day on my podcast in my car on the way to work, even though I'm not doing mine anymore. I'm still an avid listener.
So, sorry, who here is a musician and what instruments do you play?
I play a tiny bit of piano, but I usually just sing. I haven't actually done any active piano practice or playing in decades.
I'd hazard to say everybody here is a musician, whether they cop to it or not.
Uh-uh.
Nope.
I just completed something that we discussed last year on the show. I made some salve with my beeswax. Takes a while to make that happen, but I guess if you get it done in a year or so, it's still done.
You know, I have no idea what you just said, but it sounds fascinating.
As in, I sound like crap?
No, I am stoned at this particular point. And when you mentioned about beeswax, I'm like, what the?
I don't know. This particular salve is beeswax, castor oil, olive oil, coconut oil, a little bit of marijuana tincture from last year's crop, and a tiny bit of GSE.
Ah, okay.
And what do you do with that?
Whatever you need to. I wouldn't eat it. You'd get the craps probably from the castor oil.
So, since there's a lull in the conversation, I suggest a new topic. Has anyone seen or been newly discovered a TV show, a TV series that they thought, wow, that's amazing? I'm going to start off with a throw into the hat, Babylon Berlin. It's on in the UK, it's in Sky Atlantic. It's in German, set in the early 30s, I think. It's a kind of film noir TV show, hour-long episodes about the kind of the early 30s Berlin, rise of the communists, the rise of the Nazis, and all this kind of stuff. It's fantastic. Any takers?
What show is this?
It's called Babylon Berlin.
Aliens have not heard of this transmission.
Sorry, guys, I had to step away for a few. What did I miss?
Babylon Berlin. I'd heard something about some beeswax.
Well,
go on.
Yeah, I was saying, speaking of has anyone seen any kind of fascinating TV shows this year, 2017? The one huge one for me is Babylon Berlin, set in the 30s in Berlin. It's all in German with English subtitles. It's the rise of the Nazis and the rise of the communists, and oh, it's amazing. It's a film noir type TV show. It's awesome.
Is this new?
I think it was made 2016. Yeah, it's very current.
Is it on a Flix or a Plex or a Cast, or how do we access transmission?
I don't know. I see it on Sky Atlantic in the UK.
All you gotta say.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so good. There's currently two seasons of a totaling like 16 episodes, something like that. It is awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
I know Minizoke has really been into the new Netflix series Stranger Things, but I don't get to watch any new TV. I get to watch cartoons.
The Mouse?
Oh, God. Disney Junior, Nick Junior, the Netflix originals, True, and Octonauts is a recent favorite. We're always watching Octonauts. I could probably recite every one of the episodes word for word.
Sorry to hear that.
I guess there are worse things. My child is happy, healthy, and smart. I'm going to just take that as good and move on.
Indeed.
When the kids are older, you won't have to watch that stuff anymore.
There was one TV show that I found on... So I've got Amazon Prime after all this time. I've got Amazon Prime, and it's really good value for deliveries. The fact that you get TV stuff with it, hey, great. And anyway, one day, surfing the Amazon Prime, found a show called BFFs. That is fucking hysterical. That is so funny.
Black Mirror?
I'm guessing that, right, oh, wow. I'm genuinely shocked right now. So on YouTube or on Amazon Prime, there's a show called BFFs. That's exactly what it is, BFF. It's first-person shooters. They're in a kind of Call of Duty type game. It's a cartoon set in like that kind of universe. It's hysterical.
Is it meant for children?
Oh no. Oh no. Very adult language.
Okay, that's all that the aliens were concerned about.
I'm seeing a bunch of people connecting. I don't know how many of them are sticking around, but if you're getting connected, hop in here, say hi. I finally had to, and if I can do it, you guys can too.
Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to the United Kingdom, London, Casablanca, Dublin, and Lisbon.
Happy Brexit. Year to my family.
I was just thinking of them too, but I wasn't thinking of Happy New Year. I was thinking of how long it took us to get them connected to Google the other night, just to
I'm just going to text them.
Type slowly.
I thought you were going to reach to the phone and absolutely smack them, but I'm glad you didn't. I'm really glad you didn't. Hopefully our children won't have the same problem when we're advanced in age.
I'm already advanced in age, so uh-oh.
I don't think you're 70 going on 80 in some realms.
Yes, my parents were born in the Second World War.
The fact that they can even use their smartphones at all sometimes baffles me entirely. But watching them try to navigate Gmail when they're at my house is absolutely a nerve-wracking experience. They make every effort, and they're not stupid people, but they're just technologically disinclined, and they make all the effort in the world. But half the time I have to fight every urge in my body to advice from them and say, just let me take care of it.
Be gentle. There's senior citizens present.
I'm trying to be very gentle with them and with everybody, but I think that all of you can probably, because you're here, can probably understand where I'm coming from.
Yes, I tried to help my mother, who, I don't know how old she was at the time. She was probably in her 70s, and I was trying to teach her how to use email.
You have to give them credit and props for making the effort, for wanting to do it, for trying to learn it. And in a lot of cases, learning enough of it to be relatively functional, given sometimes very detailed instruction. But the effort's there, and a lot of people in their generation aren't even making the effort. So I'm seriously not really putting anybody down. My whole thing was how frustrating it can sometimes be, even when you want to give them complete and total credit for the fact they're making the effort that no one else even bothers to make.
I wonder if that comes down to the relatives, to the friends, the family. If you're getting on in years and you don't have much contact with anyone younger, then you're kind of, you've no incentive to sort of do anything beyond the normal, beyond what you already do. Whereas if you've got someone, son or daughter, granddaughter, whatever, you're kind of more inclined to want to do the things to get interested in whatever they're interested in as some sort of a link to them.
I think that has a lot to do with it. But even in the example of my mother, she used to write her own HTML and her own web pages and whatnot when she was doing her genealogy research. I mean, she was out on the web with her genealogy before Roots Web and Ancestry.com and whatnot. She was coding her own HTML, writing her own web pages. And now sometimes she has issues navigating certain aspects of Excel. And she worked in Excel and in an office job with a computer all of the years I grew up with her. So I think another part of it is that they don't use it as much as they used to. And when they try to get back into using it, they have missed several generations as far as the software goes, or in some cases, the device. And they just find it hard to catch back up.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
It's true.
A lot of it's fear. They don't think they can, you know, learn the stuff, and they'll surprise themselves if they have the will. They'll do it. You know, I know I have to will myself into learning stuff all the time.
There's a lot of truth in that too, because when I've been training people on programs at work that I was the super user for, just the program, there wasn't anything that they could do to that program that I couldn't fix or get fixed. But people were terrified of it. They didn't want to do it wrong. And I would have to tell them repeatedly before they finally figured out that it was true, that you can't break this program. You can break your PC, but you can't break this program. So don't worry about the program. If you do something wrong, we can correct it.
Sounds like you really didn't trust their ingenuity to what they could break.
Maybe not, but I never had any of them break the actual program. I had a few of them do some things that were kind of weird, but we worked it out, and it didn't take too long to do so. Now, when it came to their actual PCs, they broke those all the time. My other rule there was, if it asks you if you're sure and you're not sure, then answer no.
You know, this reminds me of another Douglas Adams quote. Never underestimate the ingenuity of the complete fool.
Exactly, because the fool has nothing holding them back.
The fool runs an errand.
I worked in IT for 35 years, and you do forget the programs that you're not using anymore. Things that I used, I had forgotten stuff by the time I quit working, things I hadn't done in a while. And now that I've been out of work for a few years, I go back and try to do a few things that I used to do, and I don't remember how to do things. I have to look things up, or I'm just completely, okay, well, this is not worth the effort.
Yeah, time is precious.
Yeah, I can totally see how that happens, because I haven't been out of what I was doing for very long at all. And there are still times, because we were on a AS400 system, that was what I was helping support. There are times I can't remember the numbers that I need to get to where I wanted to go, and I've got to look them up. And there's nothing more annoying to somebody who's been used to the program for a long time than having to sit there and go shift F11, shift F12, shift to go through the menus so you can read everything to see what you need to do next.
Alt F4 is a very useful one.
I've been involved with computers for 26 years and have been fully... The last time I had Windows installed on my main desktop system was XP. And ever since then, I find myself, every time a new release of Windows comes out, trying to learn that is difficult, because I have to support... I do part-time computer repair on the side, and then I'm also a network administrator at a K-12 school. So Linux is, you know, nowhere except, you know, on the servers that we use. We have Windows and Linux servers. I run Linux on my desktop at work, so I don't even use Windows in a daily basis. So to help my customers, you know, with their problem, because they're majority Windows users, I can see, you know, so I have to force myself to install Windows on a spare machine and use it and learn it, and I don't like it.
I guess I'm just used to it. Sorry, go ahead.
Over the years, I supported every version of Windows, and I also supported, like 30 years ago, Macintosh and other things that I didn't actually use, but you have to keep them loaded, and you have to occasionally practice with them, or you look less able than the person you're trying to help if you don't at least try to keep up. And that includes keeping a current version of Windows, probably. When I retired, I switched over to Linux for my everyday stuff, but I've got Windows 10 loaded, and I still use it probably 40% of the time.
I went away from Windows for quite a while, and then just sort of migrated back to having it on a machine, and it, you know, like it, not like it, you know, I can show people in 5 minutes how much slower and how much harder it is to do a task with Windows versus Linux. But yeah, keeping abreast of what Windows 10 or Windows 8 will do is, and I think it's been well worth it. I have to use it for one task, and unfortunately, I'll have to keep it. But I keep it on there. I use it. My wife still uses it. It's just a little bit easier, you know. There's a, you know, well, if it's not on Windows, it ain't anywhere. So, oh well.
I run into some pretty ridiculous Windows issues at work at an auto shop where I'm just not allowed to update the software, because if you upgrade, everything's broken.
Aliens understand that Windows in and of itself, especially among the Hacker Public Radio community, could be an issue.
Well, a good example is, say, you bring your car in and I need to reflash your computer, and it's from Chrysler Corporation, and it's pre-2009. The program only runs on Windows, and it will not download the firmware from their website unless you're running Java 6 on a 32-bit installation browser.
I think I just threw up in my mouth a little.
Sounds like you need either a newer car or an older car.
I wish I could tell these customers that the ones with the older cars are wonderful because the wires are easy to trace. You just read some ohms and you're done.
It's definitely that in-between stuff that is computerized and but was done so long ago. I have equipment at work that's the only way I can talk to them is to, go back to an old laptop that's got Windows 90. No, it's XP. It's the only machine that'll talk to it because the software won't work on anything else. And this stuff is carrying gigabits of data over fiber. So it shows you how old it is.
Well, one of the nice things about where I am now is my company is like this huge international conglomerate. And every 2 to 5 years, depending on the environment, they just start sending us new PCs and send these guys out who hook them up and transfer all our data and make everything work.
First thing
that's,
to do.
That's part of my job.
I feel sorry for anyone who has that as part of their job, because then you got people like me who are sitting there going, how come my printer won't print? Where are all my emails? What did you do with my pictures? Yeah, it's sorry. I apologize on behalf of all users.
That's okay. It paid the bills for me for a long time.
Windows is good for the IT community to support.
I'll have to agree there. My Linux customers are my best customers.
Is there anyone on here currently who has in the past spoken to Mini Zoak when he was Mini?
Nine.
Not I.
Okay, I was going to have him say hi, but if you guys haven't talked to him ever, then it just wouldn't hold the same weight. So we'll bypass that.
You should still have him say hi so we can hear the deep, deep tones.
Well, Zoak, can you put Mini Zoak on?
He left.
Oh, hell, he's on the recliner right in front of me. Wow, I'm an observant mom. There was a lot to be said about the fact that I missed 6'5" body mass walking right past me, right?
Good morning from the UK.
Cute Morgan.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on.
He's decided to remind me that he's no longer a minor, and he has decided to say that he will not come to the microphone.
You should have said it. He said, I don't wanna.
Complete with wine.
It goes from
I don't wanna.
Yeah, it's pretty much the latter that I heard.
So he's graduated from minor to major then.
Major what is the question?
Major Captain Sergeant, sir?
Or jerk butt? Or
she's got all dad's army on him. Don't mention your name, Pike.
No, he's actually usually, mostly, a very nice young man. It's usually just his mother whose buttons he likes to push.
What I've heard, they don't like it up them. You know the classic thing your mother does when watching Dad's Army, though? He's dead. He's dead, too. Oh, he died really young. He's dead.
Your mother sends us weekly updates of who's alive and who's not.
Yes.
Don't panic.
Does she, like, pick out the red shirts when watching Star Trek and stuff like that?
No, it's people on their street are dropping like flies.
I had a conversation with one of my former coworkers that's what it always leads to when you see somebody who's retired from the company. Oh, did you hear so-and-so died? No, I didn't hear that. You know, it's not how you doing. It's, hey, who died?
Well, I know it has a lot to do with the fact that we are so far removed from where they're at. I mean, we're across an ocean and a nation. I mean, we're a long ways away. And I know that she's a mom. And as a mom, I know that you have trouble letting go when things like that happen. And I'm not saying I would be any better if the tables were turned, because I'd probably be far worse. But if we don't send a weekly email with an update, she completely panics and thinks that we've dropped off the face of the earth. And I don't really have a whole lot to update her with. I mean, we work, we come home, we take care of the kids. We go to bed, we get up, we work, we come home, we take care of the kids. We don't have anything to say. So I don't know what to do half the time.
I'm not dead.
One word, cron job. Oh, wait, that's two words.
That might work, Soak. That's your next project. Cron job email to mom.
You know, you want to divert them. Just rewrite today's soap opera from whatever soap you choose and just repurpose that as your daily update.
I certainly don't want to say that it's not right, you know, that she's off base. I mean, she's a mom. She's worried about her youngest. That's fine. I get it. We're a long ways away. She can't just drive over and check on us. I'm totally okay with it. I just don't know what to tell her. I mean, how many times can you tell somebody nothing here has changed? Everybody's fine. Kaylee had a cold last week. Oh, well.
Yeah, just casually mention the anal probe and see if they question what? It's like, what?
Hey, that's the Grace. It's not us.
No, and I, like I said, it doesn't really bother me other than the fact that I could answer her all week, too. This is the other thing. I can answer her, like, twice a week when she emails us, and I can answer her. But she'll eventually get to the point within that month where she has to email and say, Ian, we haven't heard, or Zoke, we haven't heard from you. Sorry, Zoke.
Stand by.
My daughter's name. Do you want to do our address as well whilst we're at it?
Sure, why don't I just take care of that? I'm out of practice,
Social
okay?
Social Security number, please. Last four digits of your Social Security number,
just,
please.
Just go to Equifax and look me up.
I am so sorry.
I will search the database for Ian Zoke.
I am so fired, right?
I'll beat you up later.
Okay, so Mini Zoke, I know that I made that leaning tower of garbage, but instead of picking it up off the floor and re-towering it, could you just take it out for mom, please?
I don't want to.
He put his headphones back on and turned his volume up. Same thing.
Turn his headphones up. Turn his volume up. Yeah!
You just know he's boogieing to Britney Spears underneath that.
Not Britney Spears. I don't know what he's got going on, but it's most likely some little herd of pop band out of France or something crazy like that.
Uber punk.
Guys, sorry, I just popped in to say Happy New Year from England. We've just gone into the new year here, but it is getting late here, so I'm going to say goodnight. So apologies for the short visit.
What part of England?
Yorkshire.
My ex-boss was from Yorkshire.
Ah, okay.
Where the tea comes from. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Gordon. How are you, sir?
Do you know Ali?
Do I know?
Ali G from Steins.
Well, actually, amusingly, I used to live down in Slough, which is about, I don't know, 10 miles from Steins. And when that film came out, the Ali G in the House, I was actually watching it in a cinema in Slough. And presuming you've seen the film, one of the last...
West side or east side?
Yeah, kind of thing, exactly. One of the last lines in the film is, it's all right, we're going to flatten Slough instead. And the whole place just cheered. It was quite amusing.
That is a movie experience.
Yeah.
A moving experience in a movie experience.
Yes, both, you could say.
All right, anyway, sorry. Happy New Year.
Yes, and the same to all of you. So I'm going to be really, really rude, and having been connected for probably all of 10 minutes, I'm going to leave you to it. So, yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Cheers, love, bug. West side, Steins.
North side now.
Represent, aye?
Yeah, happy, hello from 2018.
Let's see, we still have 5.5 hours to go where we're at.
That sounds like a challenge.
The world is still here so far anyway, but maybe not when America actually enters it, 2018.
So do you think it would be rude to get me...
That would be 10 p.m.
Would it? Okay, well, I've never been known for my math skills. That's why they promoted me to finance. No, in all seriousness, for all the hard times I was just giving the not-so-mini-Zoke, he just took the garbage out.
There you go, a little bit of tough love. Never hurt no one.
And made his mom a drink.
See, my next thought would be, so what exactly are you after?
Absolutely nothing right now. I've got a full drink and the garbage has been taken out. We're good.
No, I think he meant about Minisoke. Minisoke already owns a car, so I don't think he's after the keys.
I get it. You mean when we usually say, here, what do you want? No, I don't know, because he doesn't have any obligations to me tonight, and he hasn't asked me to go anywhere, and he has his own car anyway, so.
Well, I either that or he's done something hugely wrong and embarrassing, and he's like, oh, I'm going to butter these people up before I even broach this subject.
He probably has, but he wouldn't tell me. He'd wait till it came in the mail.
So does Azok's communicating over the interwebs, does this improve your communication experience, or how does that work?
You really should hear us when we don't have our push-to-talk activated. We're talking to each other, but or yelling, or in my case, throwing things or threatening to throw things.
So may I suggest little air guns, little dart guns, you know, the soft dart guns with little rubber suction things? You could Nerf use guns. That, yeah, and you could have like the other person hold up a little alphabet, like a Ouija board, and you just sort of shoot the letters to mean to spell out what you mean.
Have you moved up to the turret?
I think our time here is probably limited, because it's probably getting close to time for the princess to wake up from her nap.
Oh, no.
In which case, you might get to hear a little bit of her before we decide to sign off, because she's out of control. We'll see.
If anybody gets a chance to check out the moon tonight, we prepared it especially for everyone on your blue marble. The moon. Where's that from? Who knows it? The moon says hello.
My backyard.
Pink Floyd?
Yeah, I saw on the internet that tonight was the supermoon and, of course, a blue moon, but I haven't looked outside. I think it's maybe cloudy here.
I probably should have asked the love bug when he was on.
Is today? Is it the blue moon today, or is it tomorrow that's actually the blue? Or it wouldn't be. It would be the second full moon of the month.
Yeah, it can't be tomorrow.
I don't recall. I know there's a blue moon coming, so.
Well, right now the moon is already a couple hands high in the sky, and the sun's just about getting down, so I think it's tomorrow.
Which makes tomorrow's full moon something else. I know they've got a name for it, and then the second full moon of the month is the blue moon. Where that came from, I don't know. Never seen a blue moon.
From the lunatics on the dark side.
I think the term blue moon has to do with rarity. So it's the second moon of the month is rare rather than the color.
Yeah.
Blue, 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 ba-ba-da-ba-da.
So I'm assuming that's where the phrase once in a blue moon comes from.
That must be. I was just looking at pictures from the eclipse. How many people got to see the totality?
We got to say it.
It was about 90% here, so it was not. I mean, it's close, but not the full Monte.
I was going.
Hello.
It was my intention to drive to see it, but I didn't get to see the eclipse because my car broke down about 60 miles from home.
Oh no! We were very lucky. It came. We were right in the path of it, and I'm happy to say that's my second one that I've got to see in my life. The first one I don't remember much of, but I tell you, that was awe-inspiring.
You're welcome.
That one isn't the princess, but the princess is now awake.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get her. Say something. Say something.
Say something. Say something.
Good eye.
Ms. Oak, it does sound like you're going to be watching those cartoons for a long time.
Well, mine is not most of that. I don't know whose child that is on the rest of this, but mine hasn't said more than, and she's just turned 4. So yes, it's going to be a while.
I'm sorry, my mistake, but okay, if she just turned 4, yes, it will be a while.
So yeah, I've got a almost, I don't know, Gosh, Zoke. Mini Zoke turns 19 on the 1st, tomorrow. And my only other child just turned 4.
Hey, what's your name?
I'm Mrs. Zoke. What's your name?
Connor.
It is very nice to meet you, Connor. How old are you?
3.
Oh, I liked 3. Kaylee, my baby princess, was 3 recently.
Is he hacking about yet?
I think so. He's frozen a couple of toys here and there.
He's certainly far more social than mine.
Powers.
What's your favorite TV show, Connor?
A Paw Patrol.
Oh, my little princess loves that too. Her favorite, she likes Rubble.
Who do you like?
You like Rubble?
Who's your favorite?
What?
Paw Patrol.
Yeah. Chase.
Yeah, she likes Chase too.
Yeah, I like Chase too. I like Over him too. I like her baby.
Yeah, that's my little princess.
They think I'm their new sister.
No, I don't think that's what they think at all.
They know you're my daughter.
The only one that you're a sister to is Hubba.
Oh, sorry. Label issues.
Got a label up again.
Sounds like she still needs to go back for a nap.
Give her a few minutes. That one's never been quick to wake up.
All right. Well, I guess I'm signing off. The wife's going to stay on for a bit, I'm sure. At least semi. So I will catch you guys later.
Bye.
Bye. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for checking in.
She is definitely her daddy's girl. Mom doesn't even rank if daddy's anywhere in the house.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh, it's okay. I've got the boy. I rank in his world.
There you go.
Well, most days. He is almost, 19 tomorrow. I don't think anyone ranks anymore, really, but I used to.
See, that's a good premise for a book, is to start this conflict between the boy and the girl and controlled by the mom and the dad.
It's kind of funny just how those things work out, because girls always go to their dads and boys always go towards their moms. And for years, Zoke didn't have that relationship because the boy went to mom. And now he's got princess and mom doesn't even rank. I'm getting it back twofold.
Mini Zoke probably just appreciates you giving him a trade. You made him a bartender.
You know, he's really, really good at that. I really should tell him he's got a future there. But no, he actually has a job now, and he's working towards getting one that's full-time. But we have a really small town that we live in, and he's working as a cook at one of our diners. And that's a promotion because he started as a busboy. So, they obviously saw some intelligence in him.
So he's like Tom Cruise without the Scientology.
You know, if he starts flipping bottles in my kitchen like Tom Cruise did, we can make a go of that financially. With our ability to market and internet skills, we will so be raking it in, right?
Kill him with fireworks.
Kill him with kindness. Flower power.
Fireworks. Fireworks.
Are you guys going to have a fireworks show, Connor?
Yeah, you have fireworks.
You know, we do here at 4th of July, but they don't usually do them here in our little town on New Year's. But if we drive about an hour west of here, we can catch them in Reno.
Las Vegas?
Holla, 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 holla,
I think his favorite holiday is Halloween.
Yeah, I think that the kids here have the same problem. My daughter's favorite pajamas have a jack-o'-lantern on them.
Dressing up is fun. Just ask Hoover.
Does anybody else have one of those, the vacuum cleaners, the robots that do their own, the Roombas? Does anyone else have like a Roomba-type vacuum?
I saw one.
I do.
We got one because they were on total sale with Amazon on Black Friday. It's not like a Roomba. It's not one of the fancy schmancy iRobot ones or anything like that. But we we have this thing. And every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up to it beeping because it's wedged itself underneath the couch.
You know, you need a sound sample instead of just beeping. You want to hack into that and replace the sound sample with Penelope Pitstop's help.
I'd really much rather it just get out of its predicament without my interaction. I don't care what noise it makes. I just think it needs to, you know, back out of its hole and start over.
Mrs. Oak.
Yes?
I have an iLife, and it's not much better. I mean, I'm amazed at what it picks up, but invariably, we have it running at 10 a.m. every morning, and it will get stuck in the same 3 or 4 different places every day.
Well, we are still trying to work out what places tend to be its biggest issue, because we've resolved a few of them. Others of them are going to require, like, huge hunks of wood behind the couch to keep it from going under the couch, or just various other items like that. It just makes me insane, because every time we close one hole, it finds another. And I don't know how, but they seem to have installed four-wheel drive on our little vacuum, because it can climb things that you would not expect it to be able to climb.
It's a Sith Lord. That's what it is. As soon as one door closes, another one opens. It's an effing Sith Lord.
Well, you know, we get up in the morning because we have it run in the middle of the night. And we get up in the morning and we search this thing out. Every morning we're on a vacuum hunt. And we have to dig and dive and look for where this thing has decided to hide itself this time. We have no idea how it gets into like 3 out of 4 places.
Well, you can guarantee it's not a Dalek. I mean, a Dalek's going to be totally stuffed as soon as you get one of the stairs. It's lost. It can't get anywhere.
Are you amazed at how much it picks up?
Oh, yeah, it does. It really picks up a lot. I mean, we have to empty it all the time. Even if it only gets stuck on one thing, I have no idea how long it's actually gone. It could have only gone for 10 minutes before it got hung up or stuck. But, it's always full.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the heck was going on before we had one of those with the amount of dirt it picks up.
I don't want to know. I really don't. I mean, I have long hair, and so I lose a lot of hair. I have long, thick hair. So no matter how many times we vacuum in this house, it's inevitable that when we do, we will have to take the roller off the vacuum cleaner and cut my hair off of it just to finish vacuuming. And it's no different when this little robot vacuum. It really isn't. It's scary. You'd think I'd be bald by now.
You know the perfect little supplement function to this device, little vacuum cleaner, is to have it respond to whistles as if like you're calling a dog. So you basically whistle and the vacuum cleaner comes shooting out from wherever it is with the cords rattling away like a tail.
I guess I haven't been able to dedicate any of my energy into making that happen with a mechanical device. I still have yet to convince my children they need to respond to whistles.
I think that's what differentiates the Roomba from these other ones, like the iLife and lower, is that, from what I understand, the Roomba has a memory and it'll map out your house. These just drive around, bounce off of things, and then eventually after an hour and a half, 2 hours, go back to its base.
Most nights mine doesn't even make it back to its base because it gets itself so hung up on something in the living room that it never even makes it back to base. And we had to start running it at 3 o'clock in the morning because if we run it any other time of the day, it is the 4-year-old's favorite plaything.
How, one that doesn't have memory like the Roomba, how do you feel like it still gets full coverage?
It does a pretty good job. It probably doesn't get full coverage. I when I watch it, it goes off in angles and like it will not go the full length of the room before it turns, but it tries to do as much as the room as possible in quadrants. If it gets hung up or stuck somewhere, that gets all messed up. When you pull it out and free it and start it again, it's like it's starting brand new. So if it was able to go through the entire room without getting stuck on something, it would probably do a decent job of hitting every space.
I agree. And I think that one of the things that we found most successful with ours is being able to lock it in one room on the weekend by itself. So like we'll do the laundry room, for example, one Saturday morning. We'll just turn it on, make sure there's no obstacles in the laundry room, put it in there, shut the door and let it do its thing. And then like the next Saturday, we'll take it into this room, into Princess's room. We'll put it in there. We'll turn it on, shut the door, let it do its thing. We've had more luck with it in that respect than we have with just letting it do its thing at night. At night, it does. It zigzags across the room. And I think that if you can get it to work and run without interruption, without getting hung up over the course of a week, it'll probably do a pretty good job of getting the whole room. But we're not seeing that happen with this one because we spent so much time trying to find where it stuck itself this time every morning when we get up.
Tell you, it's amazing the lengths that you go to have these things running, these robots cleaning, and still say it's a good idea. If you listen to just how much you clear the room out and stuff like that, that's bizarre. That's utterly bizarre.
I think that you're completely right. But you know what? If we can get this thing to do what it's supposed to do in the area it's supposed to do it in, it could save us hours a week. But in the meantime, we're losing 6 times as many hours trying to train this thing to do what it's supposed to do.
Not to mention, of course, the fact that it's mapping your home and collecting that data so that they can sell it one day.
Well, I don't have it set up in any kind of Wi-Fi network, thank God. I mean, my thermostat's about the extent I've gone to with the Internet of Things in this household.
That you know of.
Okay, that's true. I'll give you that.
Do you find yourself that you still have to manually run a vacuum also?
Currently, yes, because we haven't quite figured out how exactly we're going to train this to do what it's supposed to do. Can you hear Princess?
You have got to be kidding me. On top of all that, you're on a vacuum cleaner as well?
Well, I have to. I have a teenager and a toddler in this home. The carpet needs vacuum.
I understand the carpet needs vacuum, but I'm sorry, but that seems like failure. If the bot can't do it, that's the job of the bot. It's got one job, and if it can't do that, you know.
Well, and that's just it. And I was hoping that when we got this, we only got it because it was a huge Black Friday discount through Amazon. And we did get it, and we are using it, and we're trying to make it work. And over time, it's supposed to be ultimately better.
Maybe it only works on Fridays.
Right, we have to get it trained. But I don't know that at this stage we're ever going to get it trained, because the other aspect we're looking at now with a toddler in the house is that there is any number of things that are still on the floor when that thing decides to run. Now, typically, we do the walkthrough at night and try to put everything in its place and pick everything up and put everything where it goes. But some nights, that just isn't going to happen. No matter how hard we try, it just isn't going to happen. And that's, you know, like one night, the vacuum right after her birthday ate her balloon because it was on a string. So the next morning, we spent an hour untangling this balloon string from this vacuum because there was a meltdown happening because the vacuum had eaten her balloon.
Maybe less time training the robot, more time training your spawn.
Yes, please. But if any of you have spawn, you know they don't take programming too well.
You know, that's not
always the case.
That visual image, I could just imagine like one of the big sausage balloons, the big long oblong ones, as it gradually shrinks and pops.
Well, you see, it's funny because Zoke is an excellent father, and he didn't expect to be able to program his children like little robots, but he's also a programmer. So this has been a learning experience for him as well. And he has taken to it very well, all things considered. But yeah, children do not take programming. They just don't.
So it sounds like what you've been saying for the past while, though, is you don't have to worry about the AI singularity anytime soon.
You know what? If they ever come out with anything that can brainwash and program your children, we're beyond a point where we can save ourselves from our own detriment. I mean, You just can't. And if you ever watch kids, I mean, people who tell me they hate children, I don't think they've ever actually watched children. Children can be so amazing. Aggravating, yes. Trust me, I get that. Every day I get aggravated by my two kids. But they are extraordinarily interesting to watch. I mean, the things they do when they pretend, the things they do when they try to, when especially when they're young, when they try to rationalize the stupid decisions they've made. They're just amazing little sponge creatures that absorb everything around them. And I don't know how to explain it. It's just so hard to put into words. But the way they learn, the way they interact with things, the way they expect the world to roll out in front of them, the way they have no expectations while having expectations. I mean, the list could go on. They are just amazing to watch. Scary. And if you ever in a million years thought you could train a child, you're wrong. You can't. All you can do is somehow convince them to play by the rules you want them to play by. You will never actually truly train them. All you have is just some sort of, I don't know how to explain it, some sort of agreement that they will abide by your rules.
Children are very much like poetry.
Hi.
Absolutely amazing and interesting to the person who created it.
That's true. I think it'd be amusing and interesting to people who don't read it too, but definitely more interesting to those who do create it.
I don't want kids.
I respect that, because do you know how many parents I've seen in this world who never really wanted kids but had them anyway and should have never had them and don't give them the time that they need? I'm not saying you'd be that kind of parent if it happened to you, but for you to acknowledge that now and make that decision, I respect that completely and totally.
See, I, in a conversation, a slight tangent, but it does, I'm going to bring it back, trust me, with a work colleague of mine, and I figured out why I'm a cat person rather than a dog person. And forget the cat side, the reason I don't like dogs particularly is they have no concept of personal space. So they'll just jump on you and try to lick your face and lick your hands and get right in your face. And they mean the best. They absolutely mean the best. But I think that's part of it with kids as well, is that especially younger the kids, it's a kind of different mindset, so you've no idea what's going to, and you immediately make them just sort of turn around and run at you and sort of hug you or something like that. They just totally invade your personal space with some incoherent stuff that only they understand, but they mean the best. You know, it's, you know, that's what I was trying to get at. That's where the analogy was.
So back to the robot vacuums. You mentioned you, both Dan and Mrs. Oak, got a different model than the Roomba. What's the price difference between them and the one that can actually remember your house layout? Hello?
What happened? Do we have dead air?
I'm sorry. I think you're talking about $200, $300 difference in price. If I'm not mistaken, Roomba's are around $400.
Wow. Like,
let me double check. I know the one we got was about, it was a gift from my mother-in-law, so I'm thinking about $100 and some. Roombas are anywhere from $400 up, $374 for one I'm looking on Amazon right now.
When it becomes an automated thing like that to do some sort of a housekeeping task for you, surely it makes sense to have the device where you're able to plug it in or to switch it on as the last person's leaving the house before the work day, and it'll just work its way around the entire house, so that by the time then the first person gets back from school or college or whatever it is, then it's done its thing and it's back in its cupboard again.
That's what ours does. I mean, it does a really good job. I will say we have a great Pyrenees, and what we don't have anymore is big tufts of fur laying around, even though we have to clean it every day because of that. But it works. What it gets hung up on for us is that my wife thought it would be cute to go out to the craft store and get big googly eyes and slap it on top of it so it has eyes, and invariably the robot itself fits under just about everything, but there's an entertainment center and then my desk where it will go under and the eyes will get hung up on certain parts of it, so it can't get back out. It gets stuck and I have to pull it out. Now again, with a Roomba, I believe it would map that out and be aware of where it gets stuck, whereas with the ones that are cheaper, they don't map out where they're going. They just go in one direction until they hit a certain point.
Yeah, they don't learn from their mistakes then. So couldn't you adjust where the googly eyes go so that they're a bit lower and they don't get caught up?
I could. The best way to do that would not be to put the googly eyes on there. But there's two issues. First off, the googly eyes, they get hung up. There's also a button on top of it. So if it's a button that does like pauses it, stops it, and sometimes that gets hung up on the entertainment center or under my desk like that. But other than that, it works good. I mean, the best way to prevent that from happening is to just put a little barrier right in front of there. And I mean,
that's
it won't
go under
there.
That's what we've been trying to do. We've been trying to do some cardboard type barriers around the back and underneath of our couch so that it doesn't wedge itself under there on a nightly basis. The other thing I need to remember is to roll up my laptop cord because it likes to come into contact with that. And then, of course, like I said earlier, the nightly walkthrough of the toddler toys to make sure there is nothing down there that it can eat. Mine's not been doing too bad as long as we take those things into consideration. But like Dan said, ours is not the kind that remembers where it's been or where it's going or maps out a room. And of course, in my house, if it did that, it probably wouldn't work because I'd rearrange the furniture.
See, you're protecting against the whole Terminator thing. If it can't remember where it's come from, it's not going to have an idea of where it is and where it's going to go.
No, so you know why I rearranged the furniture? I rearrange the furniture and move heavy objects in front of the front door so that I don't have to stay up all night waiting for the teenager to come home. Because if I rearrange the furniture and put heavy things in front of the front door, he trips over them when he comes through it and his mother wakes up. And then he's ripe for a lecture about what time it is.
Yeah, and at that point, it's probably wondering, like, why do you keep telling me what time it is? I know what time it is. Like, why do you keep telling me that?
He says that too, but one of these days I'm going to change all the locks.
Into what?
And make sure that he doesn't have a key. I mean, it's going to come to a point where you respect the rules or you don't. And if you don't, you don't live here. Wow, did I kill the conversation again?
I'm sure there must be a leaderboard thing for that. Like,
if I did, that's three times in 1 2-hour span.
Oh, look who's keeping track. Ooh, look at you.
Well, you know, I gotta go for those Guinness World Records where I can.
Guinness World Records.
Okay, so if we need a new topic of conversation, I've got one. I need help. I need to come up with two predictions for what will happen in the Linux world in 2018, and I can't think of anything. So if anyone's got any predictions, tell me now, please.
Why do you need to come up with those?
I was gonna say, you just heard crickets. Is that a prediction?
Why do you need to call it locations?
I predict some major company will buy Ubuntu, probably Microsoft.
Everyone always predicts that.
I don't think Chronicle are quite for sale like that, even though the board wants to make money and whatever.
No, Canonical are on their way to IPO. I don't think they're interested in being bought at this stage. They might take some investment, some pre-IPO funding, but I think they're going to sell completely.
We've just reached another new year.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year to Cape Verde, some regions of Greenland, and the rest somebody else will have to attempt.
I still have 6 hours until my new year.
Okay, predictions 2018. It's finally going to happen. Yes, it's finally going to happen. I repeat a third time. It's finally going to happen. It's going to be the year of desktop Linux. Oh, yes. That's right. Finally.
And speaking of Microsoft buying somebody, I think they'd be more likely to buy Red Hat That would help their bottom line.
My question to all of you is, if Linux goes worldwide, or I should say worldwide, but more diverse than it currently is, how many of you are willing to support it? Because I think one of the major stumbling blocks for Linux right now is that most of the people who are able to support it aren't tolerant of the users who don't know how to run it.
I think that's not quite, well, it's true to some extent. Although actually that's the point. Linux Presentation Day, linuxpresentationday.org. We've done two of these in my city. But yeah, that's my idea to basically spread it to the public with your small events, user groups, things like that. I do think, though, that only about most Linux users actually do want it to be more widespread, Miss Souk. However, I'd say probably about 80% of Linux users do want it more widespread, or something like that, but it's still that 20 or so percent that don't really care. But the thing they hear as well is that, well, most people don't really understand computers enough to go beyond Windows or Apple, for that matter. They use what companies give them, and that's that, really. Although it's interesting, because when there is a choice, like with mobile phones, Android, we've got iPhone in the mainstream, and now BlackBerry have disappeared as well, they do Android. Microsoft has given up doing Windows Phone completely now as well, and that's just interesting, because it kind of shows what happens when there is choice in the mainstream to some extent.
I think there should be lots of choice. I think that that's always better for every party involved. I am just concerned with the corporations like mine are not going to roll out any change to any kind of major operating system without knowing they have major amounts of support in the pipeline. And from my experience, and I'm not saying this is necessarily a bad thing, but most of the Linux users I know are so well versed in the technology aspect of programming and whatnot that they have very little patience with your average user. And the average users are the ones who are going to have to pick up the use of Linux in order to make it a widespread use operating system.
Actually, there are a lot of Linux users that are actually programmers as well, but are reasonably technical enough to use them.
I know that. I'm just saying the vast majority of those that I've been in contact with, that doesn't mean all of them, and I know I am not anywhere near in contact with all of them, or even a large sampling of what's available. I'm just saying from what I've seen, and that doesn't necessarily mean it applies to every market, every aspect, every place. It's just what I've come in contact with.
See, I wonder if this is more, and this is in the whole hindsight of my ASD thing, where I can really fixate on things and I can really go into unbelievable details and monologues on, I mean, I love the Napoleonic era. I love Napoleon, the French Revolution. I can wax lyrical about that. But I can go into all sorts of, when I'm doing sort of technical explanations of things to like my mum, she doesn't need to know all the caveats to why I'm saying this. She only needs to understand the sort of the big picture.
Right, and most users are going to be like that. That's how they're going to want it to work. They're going to want you to tell them how to make it work, and they're not going to want any of the finer details. They don't care. And I'm not saying that's the right way to go about it. I'm just saying that's how 99% of them are going to be.
Yeah, exactly. And because someone that's not aware of that, that's trying to explain in all this technical detail, is like, you've lost your audience. Your words are just going straight over their head, but you're not realizing it.
Exactly. And that's what happens with a lot of people. I mean, it's like when we were kids and trying to teach our parents how to program the VCR. At some point, you throw your hands up in the air and you just do it for them because they're not going to learn. But that's unfortunately what you're dealing with a lot of the users who are out there on the computers. They want to be able to point. They want to be able to click. They don't want to have to do anything else. And if they have to do anything else, it's not going to work.
Some would learn more in the right circumstances, but...
Some would, and all should, but they don't. And a lot of them aren't going to want to, and they're not going to be motivated to for any reason. That's still, to this day, the only drawback I see to using Linux as an OS versus Windows, because Windows has dumbed everything down. Windows has dumbed it all down for every user. It's an operating system for dummies.
Windows does not particularly work that well, and I think actually a lot of these people we are talking about know this deep down, even the ones that are not particularly technical, because if you look out there, I mean, like I just said, I've used mobile phones already, but yeah, going back to that, people have iPhones and they have Android phones. It seems a lot of people actually go for iPhones as well because they think that it's more reliable and more user-friendly than Android, in fact.
I am not going to dispute any of what you just said. Everything you just said is completely correct. But what you're looking at are people who use computers only. You got to imagine, everybody has a PC at home, and they have a PC at home with Windows on it.
Hang on. Everyone has a PC at home. That is not the
case. Not everyone. No. Broad generalization.
I'm not talking about people who can't afford it. I was going to say, I'm glad that this idea of Android and iOS, iPhones and everything came up, because the reality of the situation is that most normal non-technical people may have a laptop at home that runs Windows, but they barely use it these days, because the only time people interact with a quote-unquote proper computer is at work, where they have absolutely no control over what it's running. That's the IT department's call, and that's almost certainly going to be Windows.
And if that's the only interaction they're having is at work, and they don't care because it's a work-based situation, then what they've got to roll this out to would be to the corporate entities, correct? I mean, you're not going to expect somebody. Most people use Windows at home, even though Mac has been a viable option for years. I've never liked Mac personally, but most people haven't even tried both, let alone throwing Linux into this scenario as well.
I haven't tried Mac, as in the Macintosh. Correct. Quite a few have, but a lot of people haven't. But that's also actually down to money. The Macs are too expensive, and that's another point.
I don't know if it's about how many people have bought the iPhone when it's costing everybody four times what an Android would.
People buy the iPhone anyway. Well, yeah, but not everybody. But I wanted to say something about Linux and consumers and society, and actually in capitalism and all of this. That's also why desktop Linux does not hit off, because there is no proper, serious, big company backing it, putting loads of money into it. I mean, there was Conical, and there's been some...
There's some importance to be placed on marketing. I agree with that. There's some importance to be placed on marketing. But, you know, you can't use cost as a factor, because people have bought the iPhone, even though it's so much more than an Android. And to my personal opinion, does not perform any better.
Can I stop? Please let me stop you there. Right. You say people buy iPhones rather than Android devices, and you don't think that cost is a factor. Well, the fact is this, that most people who buy a computer have to buy it outright, whereas almost nobody buys a phone outright. They pay so much per month to essentially what we call hire purchase in this country, basically lease that phone. And so the difference between 35 and 45 a month, you know, that's the difference between Android and iOS, you know, and iPhone.
I'll give that to you, because even in the United States, even if you're re-upping your two-year contract with your provider all the time, your iPhone versus your Android purchase doesn't cost you any more or any less. So I'll give that to you. So maybe that is a factor involved there. But that still brings us back to whether or not the Windows versus Linux issue is something that you see rolled out in a marketplace that's consumer or a marketplace that is corporate.
I think the big difference here is, regardless of your circles that you travel in, your work, your college, your school, whatever, you see a vast chunk of people on something that you don't use. So if you're using Windows at home, then you see plenty of people where your study buddy might be a Mac user, or the other way around, iPhones, Android, whatever, so you know that there's another viable alternative. If you're looking at, oh, I wonder what that is, then you've at least got a decent chance of your high street store, the store that you know of as an electrical gadget retailer, they've got the stock. They'll have the answers that I've got questions for. So it's a perfectly valid thing compared to Linux, where you're going to struggle to get it pre-installed. If you do get it pre-installed, the salespeople are not going to have a clue what it is. You know, so it's that's the reality you're dealing with.
I completely agree with you, Gordon. I think you're completely on point there. Because one of the things that I remember most is that, A, most of the people I know, and that's not everyone I know, but most people I know, their whole soul interaction with technology happens in the workplace. That doesn't make it right, doesn't make it wrong. It just is. And workplaces have given them Windows to work with. So when they get a personal computer at home, they go with Windows because Windows is what they know. The same thing is happening with their phones. Before my boss retired, she had an Android phone and she had an iPhone, okay? And what made her stick with the Android phone over the iPhone was simply because she found someone who could help her operate that phone and navigate that phone and teach her how to navigate that phone. That person happened to be me. I don't like apples, so she's stuck with Android. But that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, which is why I had my first question, which didn't have to do with which operating system was better or worse, because we all know the answer to that, or we wouldn't be here. But the question I had was, how many people are willing to support the average user on Linux? Because until the average user can be supported on Linux, I don't see it going anywhere. And unless people right. who are going to support it have the patience to do that, it's just
in my part-time job as a computer repair person, every time a person brings me a computer with issues, I evaluate what they're using that computer for. And when they bring it to me, yes, 90, you know, it's Windows they're bringing to me. And so I take an inventory of the software on their computer and question them, exactly what are you using this computer for? What do you do on your computer? And I evaluate. And if there's nothing proprietary that they need, then I will heavily suggest Linux and offer training and support for that. So I've converted quite a few people over to Linux.
Can I just ask you, have you found that line of business has been steadily drying up over the last few years, as in you've been doing far fewer of those jobs of actually fixing laptops and desktops for people as the death of the desktop has progressed? Because I certainly have. I used to have a pretty good side line in fixing, you know, I say fixing computers. It was mostly the reformatting or converting people or setting up new machines or whatever. Whereas now I get hardly any of that work anymore because people just don't use laptops and desktops anymore. They use phones and iPads.
Yes, I agree. It has, you know, slowed since I've been doing it for, I don't know, say maybe 20 years now. And my age demographic of customers is my age, which I'm 50, I'll be 52 this coming year, is, you know, my age and older. So the younger people, I know what you're going at, it are probably more apt to use a tablet and a phone.
Yeah. Yeah, although some of the older people use them as well.
See, I think it comes down to the people of an older generation, and I include myself in that, where if you wanted to do anything online, the only option was initially a desktop and then a laptop. Whereas the vast majority of people now online, they're perfectly well suited with a phone or a tablet. They go onto Facebook, they tap in a few replies, they listen to podcasts, they watch YouTube, they watch Netflix, play some games, play some music, whatever. A tablet's absolutely fine for them. The thing is, if they had never been exposed to a laptop, they wouldn't miss it. if they'd never been exposed to a desktop computer, they wouldn't miss it. They wouldn't have any issues with it. It would just, a tablet is perfectly fine for them.
So the thing is, if we are chasing people on the desktop, you know, what we're essentially talking about is laptops here, occasional desktop. If we, as a Linux community and a free software, open source, whatever you want to call it, community, chasing those people, then surely we're doing it wrong, because there are far fewer of those people than there ever was, and that audience is shrinking. Surely we should be doing what Purism is trying to do and pushing forward our side of things and trying to push free software, open source, into the mobile world with their Librem 5, which you can call it a phone, but it's essentially a computer, but it's a more modern computer.
You know, I've got a kind of funny analogy. I've got a funny analogy for you at this point. It's like we're playing King of the Castle, but the problem is the one piece of ice that's us is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. Yeah, it might be the king of that castle, but the castle's shrinking.
Yeah, people have moved on from what we consider computers, x86 machines. The only people who are using those are at work, whether that is people using a Windows machine to send emails and connect to, mail servers and all the rest of it, exchange servers, whatever, at work in an office, or creative professionals using, let's face it, a Mac in a studio.
I think everybody's missing the true, or as I see it, the true reason why Linux does not have a foothold in desktops and laptops. It's the fact that Microsoft and a bunch of other companies are throwing money at the manufacturers to put Windows and McAfee, etc., on the machines. Yeah. Because all of you go out to and look at computers, it's going to cost you more to get a computer without zero operating system than it will to buy the same unit.
And that has historically been the problem. But the point that we have surely all agreed upon is that, yes, someone brought up gamers. Yes, that is another core demographic of PC users, x86 machine users. And there are some people in the Linux world trying to push that forward, although they're doing it in a very pragmatic way, trying to make Steam work and the proprietary drivers and everything. And it could be argued that what's the point of that if you're only looking to run proprietary stuff? But that's a different argument altogether. But what is the point of us dwelling on this idea that Microsoft gets together with Dell and Acer and all of the other OEMs and forces them to pre-install Windows on it? And it's far more expensive to go to the likes of System76 or Entraware and buy yourself a Linux laptop, and you can't go into a big box store. But who cares about that? The majority of the people out there, the real people, not people who would ever even consider joining Mumble and talking to us right now, but the normal people out there, they don't use x86 machines anymore. They're using iPhones, iPads, and Android devices. And if we really care about pushing free software and open source to the masses and getting people to convert and realizing about that stuff and the importance of it from a privacy and all the rest of it point of view, then we need to stop chasing this shrinking market of x86 machines and start thinking about mobile. I've been saying this on this New Year's Eve show for the last 3 or 4 years.
Right.
It's still, people in the Linux community are still chasing x86.
Well, 32-bit is kind of dying out. We're going 64-bit, only 40-bit. Yeah, we're talking about desktop. As for the mobile, I agree that Linux should be chasing the mobile more. And well, there were attempts, but they've all kind of died out now, except for Yola's Sailfish OS. That's still around. That's so I got a Spirit X. I'm going to be putting that on there later on.
And UbiPorts as well. Which is a continuation of Ubuntu Fireman.
There's UbiPorts, which is great. But the thing here now is that because Canonical has dropped Ubuntu Touch, because Canonical, whoever decided that in Canonical, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to say Canonical. Because that was dropped by the actual company, the actual sponsor,
That's basically it. That's never going to go on a phone ever again, probably, except unless the community ports under UB ports. But there won't be hardware deals again, like BQ or Miser. I really don't think so.
I would say different, okay? I'm going to tell you why, right? Yes, when Canonical were doing deals with Meizu and BQ, they were selling hardware with this pre-installed, right? Okay, that is fair enough. But they made one crucial mistake, and that was, you could call it arrogant, you could call it ignorant, whatever, but they refused to support Android applications. However, what UbiPorts is doing now is they are integrating Anbox, and it's not been released yet, but it's being developed at the moment. And so Anbox is a application, it's free software that lets you run Android applications on a Linux desktop.
I know about that.
They're integrating that into UbiPorts, into Ubuntu Touch. It would be much better if everyone used headphones for this, by the way, because whenever we have people talking over each other, they get a lot of echo. But anyway, they're integrating that into Ubuntu Touch, UbiPorts. It's still the branding is a little bit unclear at this stage. But anyway, once they get that working, and potentially with MicroG as well, which is free software implemented with Google services, you might well have a situation where you can sideload at least Android applications onto Ubuntu Touch. And when that happens, if that happens properly, what we're going to have is a mobile phone that is GNU/Linux that will run Android applications. So it's Ubuntu Touch with Android applications. So it's all of the good bits of Sailfish, potentially, where you can run Android applications alongside it being properly open source and free software. And so that potentially will attract a lot of developers to the platform. Now, I'm not saying that that is necessarily overnight going to mean hardware pre-installs and deals with the likes of BQ and stuff. However, if you get a lot of developers coming over and if a buzz is created with that, then there is the potential that a small seller of devices like BQ may do a deal with UbiPorts. That must be their goal, and it should be their goal. And I'm not talking in 2018, that seems very unlikely, but perhaps 2019 or 2020, we may see a bit much on hardware again, running Android apps, and that would be a major step forward for open source mobile operating system, because it can run Android applications, you know, in this hypothetical situation where Anbox has been implemented perfectly. And that means that people don't have that barrier to entry. I could start using that immediately then, because there are certain Android applications that I rely on, and therefore I can't use the old Ubuntu Touch. And there are going to be a lot of developers who will be attracted to that platform. And the one thing that Steve Ballmer got right was developers, developers, developers. You need those developers working on the platform. And the biggest problem that all new mobile operating systems have is applications, the lack of applications for it. But we're not going to see that problem potentially because of these Android applications. So for me, UbiPorts is the one to watch for 2018, definitely. And it is the hope for bringing free software to the masses. And I'm not saying that's going to happen in 2018, but I'm saying we're going to see the start of that movement happen in 2018 if all goes well.
I would agree that UbiPorts is one worth looking at, definitely. I mean, I've got a BQ 4.5, I've got a Miser MX4, and I've got an M10 that's got a bit of a screen issue now. But anyway, the full HD. And I was really passionate about UbiPorts. I even went to a talk in Brussels where I got to meet Mark Shuttleworth in 2016. I went to those talks that were happening at FOSDEM, and I was, when they were really talking about a tablet and what was going to come and all that stuff. And it was great. And then I got to actually meet Mark Shuttleworth at the end briefly, and I talked to him and I got to shake and he shook my hand and stuff like that. And I've used it as my daily driver, the MX4, for a good 2 years, despite all this. Oh, it doesn't run Android apps and it won't do this and won't do that. Well, it worked fine with text messages, calls and browsing. But here's the thing. I don't quite believe that. I mean, I understand the hope and the passion and the that you have, Joe, for UB ports and how it may hit off and all this, but I think that's had it now, to be honest, because there is no company behind it like that. And that's something else. We have this thing called capitalism, we have this thing called consumerism, we have this whole money system. You kind of need a company of some sort to kind of back these things out into the mainstream. And UB Ports doesn't have that community, where Sailfish kind of does, but Yola probably isn't going to make it quite either, but it's going to be a nice niche OS anyway. And that runs Android apps really well with its compatibility layer.
I don't think it all has to do with backing from a big company. I mean, yes, don't get me wrong. I know that helps. I know it really does. But several things in this world have come out with little to no backing, but they've had a very marketable product that has had something revolutionary that wasn't available anywhere else. And it has taken off. Yes, and in this case,
we're talking about freedom and the privacy that goes along with that.
I know, but
as for them not being a proper company...
I'm living in a country that has founded itself on freedom. It is systematically giving away every freedom it has for security in everywhere but the technology world. So I don't know if that's a viable way to sell your product these days. Right or wrong,
that you know.
I am completely with you on freedom should be what it should be based on. But we know that we're not the norm, guys. We're not what everyone else is basing their decisions on. They're not thinking like we are.
But can I just come back to this point of them not being at this big company or whatever? Yes, UbiPorts as a project is not backed by a huge company and a billionaire who's been to space. However, they do have grassroots support. They have a big community, big communities behind them. And if you look at their Patreon, it's at 2,600 something a month.
The UbiPorts work is amazing, what they're doing. The Norwegian guy and the rest of the team, you know, they're very passionate. I've seen videos, the QA's videos, they're really passionate. And it'd be great if they could have more donations. It really would be. So that they could, in fact, it would be great if they could have more donations so that he could actually work on it full time as his day job. But, you know, that's not happened yet, has it? But I don't think a few guys and okay, maybe more developers really, but that as a community project you can hit off. It's like saying, hey, look, I'm involved with Media Distro as well to an extent. I should add here. So it's a great example. I can use this example. That's a nice community distro, keeping the old Mandriva alive, all community, volunteers, very democratic, all that great stuff. But, you know, that's not going to become the number one distro. It's just not very likely because of how
it is. No, but
it's
number one by default, only truly free software, asterisk, drivers and things. But it's the only free software operating system file devices that we have. Therefore, it is the best that we have. It is the most open source by far, apart from to run the hardware.
Well, yeah, it's one of the most open source, definitely. I wouldn't disagree with that, although... Sailfish is mostly open source. I mean, the graphical use interface apparently graphical use interface isn't, they say, but there's a way to get an open source one and things like that. But you know, running things like BTFS in there, Wayland, it's got some great desktop technologies in the background, and it's, you know,
Sailfish is a great operating system. From what I've used of it, it is probably the best. It's probably better than UbiPorts, but it's got this proprietary UI on it, which I don't think Yola have any intention of open sourcing. And therefore, that really puts me off it. And it drives me towards UbiPorts, which has a way to go. But as I say, once this Android thing happens, I think that's going to be a real watershed moment in 2018.
So, Joe,
I wanted to ask you this. Do you think that the open source community should, in essence, shift its... priorities to more mobile platforms and less into Linux and BSD?
Here's the thing. It depends on whether or not you want to attract new users to the platform, and if you want to attract normals, for want of a better word, to the platform. I don't want to see desktop Linux die in terms of development because I use it every day and I want it to be good. But that said, I think that if there are members of the community who do want to go out and evangelize, for want of a better word, advocate is one that I prefer, that this platform, this and this idea more than the platform, this fundamental principle, open source or free software, whichever one you prefer, if that is what we're interested in, then we have no choice but to go after mobile devices.
Okay, well then I'm 100% behind you in that. For open source's sake, you know, a little more time or effort needs to be done in the mobile arena to give us the equivalent of what Linux is to the x86 to the ARM processors that are in phones and tablets.
Well, I think that all of you are on the right page.
Of course, I agree with all of you about most of everything what you're saying. But what you've got to remember is that your average user doesn't A, care about open source, B, care really about their security because they've entrusted it to other companies that have not done that for them for decades. So I don't. You're going to have to give them something really big in order for them to snap that up as what they're going to use going forward and lure them in, so to speak.
So, Joe, you alluded to one factor that you believe was the downfall of the Ubuntu phone was the lack of apps. Was there anything else that you feel like where Ubuntu went wrong?
Well, I think that trying to completely reinvent the mobile was probably a mistake. I think that people generally fear change. You only have to look at Windows 8, and then the subsequent change sort of back to the traditional paradigm in Windows 10. People do not want this new idea of scopes and things. But I think that the apps thing is the absolute fundamental thing, because you've got this, there's an app for that slogan or whatever. And the thing is that if they had implemented Android apps, which would have been a lot harder at the time because Anbox has progressed significantly since then, and it's now technically far easier. I say easier, it's still difficult, but it's technically possible now to implement Android apps to a point where they will work well, at least in theory. And I think that had they tried to progress that and accepted that they needed to be able to run third-party apps from Android to sort of bootstrap the platform, then that would have been one thing. And that's a mistake they made. But I do think that totally reinventing the UI and having all these gestures and everything is too complicated. If you look at Android OS, okay, there are pretty major differences, but there are some things in common with it. It has what is an equivalent of a desktop, the home screen. It has icons that you click on. Whereas this idea of scopes and just, I still can't fully get my head around it. And I'm tech. So the average user hasn't got a hope of getting on with it. And that, I think, once the Android stuff works in Ubiports, Ubuntu Touch, whatever you want to call it, that I think the next thing they need to address is getting at least options for the UI on it and having a more traditional Android and iOS like UI. And you could say, well, what's the point of doing this if it's just going to ape and copy the proprietary platforms? Well, the clue is in that word, proprietary. This is not a proprietary platform, and freedom, open source, and the privacy and security that comes along with that is the selling point.
I wonder if there's an analogy here between comparing, imagine if Linux and BS, but I don't know about BSD, but certainly Linux, imagine if they decided Wine is never a thing, so any Windows programs, you cannot run them at all on Linux, because we want to be pure, we want to do things all our own way. I wonder, would that have taken off as much as it did? Because at least then you had the option to dual boot, you had the option to run Wine, for programs that you couldn't work around. I wonder if that's the same sort of a thing with...
If you imagine a world where you didn't have the OS Prober, you didn't have Grub that picked up on the Windows loader and made that to dual boot, and you didn't have Wine, I think you would have far, far fewer people who are willing to try it out in anything more than a live session. It certainly helped me. So the ability to dual boot, in all honesty, I still dual boot on some of my machines because I need Windows.
Yeah. So Okay, dual booting. Yeah, I agree with that. Most Linux users dual boot, I would have thought, because of certain programs here and there. Wine can be helpful because it lets you run those two Windows apps. However, what I wanted to add in here is the whole thing about Android apps, UB ports, and also the scopes, because Joe mentioned scopes. Now, first of all, I think basically, quite simply, Console did not want to support Android apps, or apparently, there were also some technical reasons why they didn't just do it. Actually, I can't tell you quite what these reasons are, but I remember things from the IRC channel and someone, but they didn't want to do Android apps because of some technical reasons too, I believe, actually. But yeah, people aren't going to make native apps if they can just run Android apps. That's a debate in itself, but Yola decided to support Android apps. As did Samsung Tizen, but that's a different story there, slightly. But Joe was talking about scopes and the failure of Ubuntu Touch or whatever, and I think the scopes idea wasn't really a problem as such. It just sort of loads up web pages, a lot of this web apps and all this, and then you get a few of those apps that aren't web apps. Some of them are quite good, like I really like Styleboard that Alan Pope made. Little Richard Stallman quote board. I love that app. Even the Asteroids in UB ports or Ubuntu Touch. I got to say, try that out if you got one of these devices, because that implementation is really good, how it's done. One life, not free, and just all the rest of it. But anyway, what I think kind of made them fail as well, to be honest, and we're talking about UB ports as supporting Ambox as well. We were. And here's something to bear in mind is this. I got an MX4. It's in my pocket right now. But that's a legacy device now under UB ports. And just like it would have been underneath Conical if they'd carried on with Ubuntu Touch. In other words, that's going to run the 15.04 based Ubuntu Touch or UB ports, and that's it. It will not get any of the 16.04 based update, which Conical were working on before they closed the whole project down, and UB ports are still working on. The goal is to have a 16.04 based version. The problems with Ubuntu Touch as well was that Conical started off with click packages for apps, which later meant that basically all of the app developers would have to redo their apps because they've switched to Snappy, which causes issues in itself when you think about it. Another issue to some extent, it's not really an issue for Conical as such, but it is for more so for UB ports actually, is that of course Ubuntu Touch use MER, and that means that for the graphical server. And that means UB ports, I believe, are trying to basically make it work under Wayland, or for the time being, because you know they don't want to be supporting a completely different graphical server that obviously hardly anybody else is using. So that's holding up some of the progress I would have thought as well. And
can I just say, as for MIR, not to be confused with MIR, of course, but MIR, MIR, which is the display server that they will for Unity 8 and the phone, that now has been adapted to be a Wayland server, because of course Wayland is not a server, it's just a protocol, and so you need something to interact with Wayland, and MIR is being actively developed by Canonical as we speak, because they need that for their IoT signage systems and all the rest of it. So it's not something that's just been abandoned. And so it is entirely feasible for them to continue to use that as a compositor with Wayland. And obviously that's something of a simplification of that, an oversimplification. But I don't think that say that MIR is dead or whatever is true at all. It's, if anything, it's further along than it was in April when they dropped the phone.
So what company is going to pick up this UB ports ball and make it available to the masses.
If
Ubuntu can't do it or Canonical, then who's going to bring it?
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's basically, well, I didn't quite say it like that, but that's basically what I was sort of saying earlier, that it's under community now. The community is very passionate, but it is a community. It's not they're not volunteers, they're not paid full time and all the rest of it. And I think
I don't care. What I'm saying is this community can develop this UBports OS to their heart's content, but until some major manufacturer starts producing hardware that it runs on and advertises it on TV so that the mass people, you know, the masses see it, like Android and iOS, I just don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Yeah,
guys, well, that's fair enough. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm going to take off for now. I might come back later, but it's time for us to start our festivities on the west coast of the United States. And to do that, we're going to head to my sister's, where I have limited availability to said equipment.
Okay, nice.
Have a good one.
Happy New Year, Mrs. Soaps.
Happy New Year's, guys. I'm sorry I don't get to talk to you guys more often, and hopefully that will change in the upcoming year. Happy New Year.
Okay, I was about to chip in with an answer there. Sorry, I was about to chip in with an answer to that question about a major manufacturer coming along. Now, that you had a couple of manufacturers working with Canonical, but the brutal honesty of the situation there was that Ubuntu Tuck was pretty terrible as a consumer OS. Now, the thing is that it's not being pitched as a consumer OS anymore. It's a community project. And as such, my opinion has massively shifted, because I was very negative about it when it was being sold on consumer devices, albeit on a couple of niche websites. Was Canonical were pretending that this half-baked thing was finished, and it was quite frankly far from being finished. Now it's actually further along than it was. And also, once this Android stuff happens, and once we get some more development, it will be closer to being finished and a consumer product. Now, for a major manufacturer or even a small manufacturer to come along, and in order to sell it to them, you need something that's actually good. I think that this year we're going to see a major improvements with UBports or Ubuntu Touch. The branding needs to be, that's one of the things they need to sort out, but technically they need to get that sorted first. And that is what they are currently working on. And I honestly believe that that is going to happen this year. And I'm not saying that there's going to be a major manufacturer interested in shipping it, or even a small one, this year, 2018, but perhaps in 2020, it may be at a situation where it can be pushed out on a small number of devices with a small OEM.
Well,
and
maybe
then, if that works out well, maybe it can go mainstream.
Maybe in 2020 it can get an OEM again, but although by then Android would have gone miles ahead with whatever, as well as iOS, the two big targets in that sense. We're talking about market share. So, you know, it's going to probably remain in the East, though, Ash. What I do like, did mention how it's under a community now, and I said something earlier on here, but what I really like personally in UBports actually is the little welcome app, which has a nice little message about what it is, how it can't really compete against Android and iPhone, but now it doesn't matter because it's not a commercial product, basically. And I think it's the same thing on the website somewhere. You probably know what I mean, but yeah.
Yeah, they have admitted that it's not a commercial, consumer-ready product. It's a project rather than a product, and that is the first step to success. First, you have to admit you have a problem, and you know the problem was that it was not consumer-ready, and they've admitted that, and now they're working towards that in a very full and much more. Much less arrogant way than Shuttleworth was trying to do it before. And fair enough to him, Shuttleworth, he had this product that he really wanted to push. And so you can't, if you're trying to push a product, be humble about it. You have to back Apple and be very confident about it. But the reality is the confidence was totally misplaced, and it was a terrible operating system compared with Android and iOS. And if you look at UBports now, it still can't compete. But at the same time, now the goalposts have shifted. It's a community effort, and therefore I have a lot more respect for it.
The idea that it's a terrible operating system or half baked and all this. Now, okay, before the BQ phone with it on and before the Mizu phone, I didn't use it because I didn't have a Nexus 7, but I believed that there were like a lot of very half this and that. It really was like alpha. There were screenshots with things missing apparently somewhere, I believe, and all this, but that's before 2015. So I'm going to, putting that to the side, I want to talk 2015 to now. basically, when I started using it, well, I've got that BQ4.5 when I first started using it personally. Now, I would say personally that it was actually that despite all this, oh, it doesn't do Android apps and all the rest of it, actually, for the basics, it was actually very usable. And it still is under UBPulse as well. You can do a text, you can do a call, you can go on web browsing, you can install a few apps that are native, and some of them are actually quite decent. Now, the idea that it's a bit half-baked or whatever because it doesn't run various commonly known Android apps, that's its own debate in itself that we've been talking about.
I think you're kind of brushing over that. That's a major, major thing because people don't differentiate between the third-party apps that they put on their iPhone or their Android phone. If they use Twitter, if they use IMDb, if they use whatever it is, they install it and they use it and they don't make any distinctions between it's a first party and a third party. So if you're going to...
And I thought the Unity 8 interface was very nice on the Ubuntu Touch and in the preview version in 16.10, 17.04. And I could see improvement there as well, but they still dropped it. There's YUnit carrying on the desktop version. But yeah, the app thing, okay. It's a debate. One idea is that it doesn't matter that it didn't support Android apps or yet. The other side is that it does matter. It did matter. And, you know, that's...
The point there is, if you're selling someone, if they've used iOS all their days, and you're trying to sell them on Android, you can at least say, like, the vast majority of the apps that you use every single day, you point out the apps on your iPhone that matter to you, there's Android equivalents, and vice versa. You can, that's interchangeable, you can push someone one way or the other. You compare that to something else, a Windows phone. You look at some apps, it's just not available on Windows Phone. You look at some apps on the Ubuntu thing, it's just not available.
That's a good point. Windows Phone as well had an apps issue, apparently, where a lot of apps were not available that people wanted. And so that's partly why it lost a lot of market share, I believe. And also BlackBerry.
Sebastian, can I ask you a question quickly? Sorry to break the flow of the conversation. Are you using headphones?
Not at the moment. Maybe I should put some in if I can find some.
It would make it far easier to conduct this conversation if you were using headphones, because every time we try and sort of interrupt each other, it gets very difficult. I mean, I know it's not possible for everyone to use headphones, but if anyone who wants to talk could do, then it would make everything far easier. Sorry to try and be technical about this, but it just makes it a nicer, more pleasant conversation.
Yeah, hold on. I think I might have some, actually. This
reminds me of me last year when I came on at the very last minute onto the New Year thing and I could not for the life of me find my headphones. I knew I had them because I did podcasts before, could not find them at all. And then the following day when I woke up and sort of looked at the, it's, oh, they're there, right underneath the laptop, and I never saw them.
I have that with plectrums. I can never find my favourite plectrum. I moved my laptop, it was underneath my laptop, I can't believe it. How am I sounding as we're talking technicalities? Because I'm using a Bluetooth headset. Is it coming through loud and clear?
Your curses are coming through loud and clear with the blue headphones. Okay, that was an attempt at a joke. Obviously, it fell kind of flat. No worries. Carry on.
You broke up, unfortunately. I think the key to the joke was lost in the slight technical, you know, the slight glitch in the sound.
I'll go with that.
Is this thing on?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, can hear you loud and clear. Well, we talked about mobile quite a lot, right? But one thing we haven't talked about at all is Purism and their Librem 5, which they crowdfunded that this year. They got over $2 million towards it. And they're planning to have a completely FOSS phone. And we're not talking about something like UbiPorts, where it's free software sourced from the kernel and the drivers upwards, on top of the kernel and drivers, which have to be blobs. We're talking about a phone which will be running completely free software. All the drivers and everything will be blob free, and it's going to have a proper GNU/Linux based system on top of that. and it's going to run potentially KDE or GNOME, and that's going to be delivered hopefully early 2019. That is, if they can deliver that, that is surely the great hope, the great secondary hope, along with UbiPorts. Have any of you followed this, and what are your opinions of it? Do you have any hope for it actually, for Purism actually delivering it?
I would gladly switch from Android to this device if it had the apps that I needed.
Okay, so I've got some headphone thing, and I assume I can still be heard as well. Just test that first, and then I've got to say something about Libra phone as well.
Yeah, that seems to be working fine.
The lines you're looking for, Seb, are testicles, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Three?
It's like Bender.
Right, the Libra M or Libra phone or whatever, yeah. Now, I wanted to actually crowdfund that and I still do, but I didn't really have £500 in spare cash right now, so I haven't crowdfunded it for that reason. Although last time I looked, it basically said, we've got $2 million, so if you want to have the phone anyway, just pay up later on or add yourself to the list or whatever, and you'll get one in 2019 as well. I mean, they didn't expect to deliver this phone until January 2019 by the earliest, although I think there's a developer phone before that, possibly, for those who crowdfunded that. Somebody said to me from my Linux user group that apparently it has quite awful hardware. The hardware is quite awful, apparently. It's not that, you know, the RAM and all the rest of it. But I don't know how true that is or not. But the idea itself, I think, is very interesting. It's supposed to be all free software respecting. It's Linux based. They've done laptops like this already. It's going to be able to just switch off the webcam and the MyFrame kill switches or whatever, and it's going to run some sort of, well, it's got their own operating system, Purism OS, based on Linux, and so yes, I do want to get one, and I intend to get one at some stage, I expect, and yes, if it goes wrong, they will probably refund everybody, but they've already released a few laptops like this, so yeah.
See, is this not a case of 2017 spec hardware that already has been deemed as being a bit meh, but that'll be released in 2019, where it's competing against 2019 hardware?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying, that apparently it's 2017 or whatever hardware that's already not that cutting edge and all the rest of it, and then the actual phone is not going to come out until like 2019 as well. Although I think I did read that they might upgrade some of the hardware a little bit, but I'm not sure quite.
Yeah, because I can see that really working in the marketplace. Okay, come on here, boys and girls. You've got the new iPhone 9, the greatest iPhone 9, or you can have this other thing that's the equivalent of iPhone 6. Well, don't you think the old age, the retro thing, is a good thing these days? Come on, you've got to go for the old thing.
Well, to be fair to them, they have said that the specs are not final yet, and it depends on what they can actually get hold of and where things develop, but they will at some point have to freeze that hardware in order to develop the software for it. So it is probably going to be outdated by the time we see it, but
so
that's not really the point. It's a proof of concept at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much that. I mean, I think it's more a case of the bang for the buck. If you're paying top dollar, you're expecting like the newest hardware, the newest innovations. Yeah. If you're paying entry level, I mean, I'm perfectly content with an entry level laptop now, but I know that I'm not going to get anything fancy for that. I'm going to get something that's perfectly functional for what I need, but for other people, I'll look at that and go, is that called a laptop? You know,
it's a bit of a side point that I want to make now, but it's while we're talking about this. But that's something else, actually. A lot of these Linux phones, I mean, okay, so the Xperia X, which I'm on now, I believe that's from last year or something like that. Yes, it can
no
run.
Way you, there's no way you're on Xperia. No way, I'll tell you. You've hidden that well.
It says in my name, but yeah. I want to go through a few of these phones. I'll start with that one because, yeah. I believe that's from last year. I'm not sure quite when it was released, but I believe it's already a bit old because they're going on about the XY or whatever on TV now. I don't really follow Sony, yes, it can run Yola under the, when you put it on yourself and all that, under the community thingamajig. However, then let's look at the like MX4 as well. Ubuntu phone that came out.
So you're running I believe Android, but Xperia X could run Yola.
Yeah, when I get the Sailfish for it, I can put that on it. That's what I'll be doing later on. But I want to talk about some of these phones. So when they released the Meizu MX4, the Ubuntu phone, that in 2015, I believe that phone was already about 2 years old. But I mean, it was sold under Android originally. Also, I'm not sure about the BQ4.5 quite, but I believe that was a bit old in the hardware sense as well. And I know the Yola phone was already old when that came out, or the sort of hardware that was in it. So it seems that a lot of these Linux phones that do come out, generally speaking, are already running quite old hardware. That, you know, LibreM, Yola, Ubuntu Touch, probably some of the Firefox OS phones when they were released as well, and, you know, so it goes on.
Now, to me personally, I wouldn't, the hardware that a open source operating system on a phone or a mobile device wouldn't have to be comparable to whatever, you know, Apple is using or Samsung, if the performance was comparable, because I don't rush, since I use Linux, I don't have to rush out and buy new hardware. I'm using 10-year-old computers here, you know, but the performance is comparable to a newer computer because I'm running optimized open source software on it. So if the performance feels the same on a cheaper device, then I'm still all for it. But that's just me because I'm already involved in the Linux, you know, ecosphere.
Well, yeah, I mean, older hardware doesn't necessarily mean bad, but obviously, generally speaking, a lot of people would probably prefer really a Linux running phone on, you know, newer hardware. But obviously, that even the slightly older hardware still works quite well, or should do, and the same with laptops really these days.
See, another element to this is what people experience as a kind of clean experience. Like, you get Android, unless you get it from a Pixel, it's not really Android, it's Android plus other things, it's Android plus what Samsung do to it. Whereas, if you get a Windows laptop, it's not Windows. It's Windows plus whatever Dell do to it, or plus whatever HP do to it. It's rarely Windows. You rarely see what Windows actually is. Compared to back in the mobile world, you get an Apple phone, it's the same Apple phone. It's the same iPhone.
Well, yeah, that's true. Well, definitely with Android, because... But hey, that's sort of part of it. It's an open source project, really, isn't it? Well, not Google Play and all that, but that's why it can go on all these different manufacturers in the first place. Most people don't really know that or think about that. But then each manufacturer does its own implementation of Android, its own branding a bit. I do actually think the Xperia X Android is pretty good, how Sony set it up. I still have to remove it because I've already talked about that. But yeah, each one does its own Android customizing, basically, which, you know, for the better or the worse. Although then people kind of think, get used to the Samsung implementation and things like that, and they might find it slightly too different with another one, but I guess that's how it is.
Okay, we need to take a small break here and welcome in another new year. We want to say Happy New Year to Brazil, Uruguay. And that includes Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, Brasilia, Montevideo. So Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Although, and then Apple just keep the same interface, and that's part of the whole Apple thing. They make, with iOS and Mac, it's all, you know, Apple branding, and they don't let people customize it much, and that's what they do as well, Gordon.
I've got a question for Joe. What about Chromo S? Because it seems it's already got a foot in the door of the same place you would have the Ubuntu Phone OS going. I mean, it runs essentially everything from a browser. It can already access Android apps. It was a little sketchy at first, but I believe that over the summer they enabled Android apps for most of even the cheaper Chromebooks, though I don't know how many of the regulars, as I believe you call them, are even aware of that. I'm certain most of the regulars, you know, have no idea what Crouton is or what to do with it. But I think probably that's going to be big marketing for Chromebooks going forward is, hey, you can run Hulu and you can run Netflix all from the same app as you run on your phone. And that's essentially what I do with it. I mean, this is the computer that sits in front of my TV set. Start Netflix, start Hulu, throw it over the Chromecast on the big screen, you know. Sorry, check out my social media, you know, and my email in the browser. You know, somebody makes a post that has a link that has a web page, go track that down. Find, you know, somebody makes a post on G+. Oh, hey, I'd like to buy that thing, you know. Go find it on Amazon, you know, do my commerce through it. Not so good for things like, hey, I've got a report due Monday, and I'm gonna sit down and do that in Google Docs. So that is certainly a possibility. And, you know, really, since I understood the Canonical mobile app was going to be everything through a browser, well, you know, yeah, Chrome OS is not really a mobile app, but seems like it's pointed in that direction.
No wonder.
Well, yeah, you're definitely right. That is essentially just a web browser, and if you think about it, Google has done probably one of the best jobs in the world of getting people to use Linux on a daily basis. But the magic trick that they've used to accomplish that is making sure nobody knows they're using Linux on a daily basis. They use Google Search. They use all of the other Google products running on Linux on the back end. They use Android, which is, of course, running Linux. And now they're using Chrome OS, which, think about it, they're probably the most successful desktop Linux operating system, but it's not GNU/ Linux. It's running loads of proprietary software. So really, what's the point of using it? If if you're totally pragmatic and you want something that's good, then yeah, if all you need is a web browser, then Chrome OS is great. But I'd rather have, I've got a Chromebook and I run what's effectively Ubuntu. I forget the name of the distro now. And if I want to run Chrome on it, I'll install Chrome on that, but then I've got the opportunity to run anything else I want on that. So I don't think that there's any point in pairing it, because it's got this huge proprietary layer on top. And as a result of that, I have very little interest in it.
I think there is different things here, though. And it's about what you use it for. There's a completely different idea of the device that you sit on a desk or on your lap, you flip it open, you sit and it's got the full tight keyboard on it, you do homework, you do work for the job, whatever it is, you're doing tasks, you're getting stuff done, and then you close it down. That's a completely different device from something that you carry about with you all the time that you're going to need to interact with when the phone goes, with text messages, with email and whatever. You want that to be absolutely 100% reliable, battery lasting ages and easy to respond, doesn't crash and all that kind of stuff. That's two different sort of things.
Yeah. So Google, they use a lot of Linux, but people like Joe said, Android, Chrome OS, But it doesn't say Linux on there. They don't even use GNU in Android because that's done as well. Which is all kind of clever. It's all marketing. People go Android, Android, Android. They don't go Android, Linux, or Linux, Chromebook. On top of that, though, what they also do, because Google are clever, and I mean, you know, they really are clever, because what they've really done here as well, of course, is that they've, you know, they started this Chrome OS and this Chrome browser, under the Chromium framework. I believe that was open source first, and then the open source community basically started doing a lot of development for free for Google, and then they, as far as I know, they basically take it back, the code, rebrand it, put a bit of branding on it and do some other changes, and then of course release it as closed source software as well to the public. So they basically use the open source community to do a lot of the development for them for free. Now that's clever, isn't it?
Well, I think with Chrome and Google, I think it's more like IE was so dominant before that no one ever thought anything would ever change. And then Mozilla came along and fired out Firefox, and that going from nowhere had some huge market shares as people thought, yes, something other than Internet Explorer. And then on the coattails of that, Google came along and said, you know what, we could do the same. And they had their Chrome, and with that additional push, Chrome became the huge
thing.
Google latched onto.
The Chrome. That slightly annoys me, to be honest, to an extent. Although it doesn't really matter as much now, really, because the browser wars in that sense are over. I mean, Google Chrome obviously supports quite a lot of web standards and all that under WebKit, which obviously has its links back to KHTML, which was Conqueror's rendering engine on top of that. So again, they've used the open. No, actually, it was Apple who took KHTML. But anyway, and then Google used it as well. And to make WebKit, the idea that Chrome, what they've basically done is what Microsoft did with Windows. They put Internet Explorer into Windows, that got 95% market share basically. Google put Chrome into Android, that got popular, and now it's got really popular. Loyal to Firefox still, because that's the one that changed the market really. That's the one that made Internet Explorer improve and all the rest of it. Will start to make them improve again after Internet Explorer 6 being so awful with its web standards and all that.
See, this is the thing. Even going back to, I used to think, this is the old me used to think, I'm going to sidetrack it a wee bit, on guitars, I thought the guitarists in the 60s, they had it, the 50s and 60s, they really had it going on. I've got a 56 Les Paul now, and it's not easy to play because it's not. You know, there's been all these sort of advances in technology that still makes it a guitar, but a modern instrument is so much easier to play. It's so much more versatile. So I'm thinking there's the same here. Just because it was a traditional sort of way of doing things doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good way.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.